Bob. Oh, Rick Smith's on the way. Bye, y'all. And Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk with Angela Peoples from Campus Progress. Today, the National Day of Action to Save Pell Grants. Again, you look at the absolute insanity that has gone around higher education over the last generation. The fact that we are saddling our college kids with massive debt and in the process, a lifetime of misery because the default rates, especially on these for-profit universities, just through the roof. And at the end of the day, man, that saddling these young folks with all of this massive debt, I think is going to harm our country, because how many people are going to be able to afford it in the future? As we move down the road, college kids of college age are going to say, no, I don't think so. Let me go do something else. And that's going to limit the opportunities for folks in the middle class and the lower working class. And I think that's part of the game plan. I think that really is of the grand scheme, which is why we're seeing the destruction of education from top to bottom. You look at these Republican governors and these budgets, and even some of the Democrats who've come out with, hey, let's start cutting education, let's slash and burn that, and let's hold that as we have infrastructure for the last 30 years. Starve it, to where it finally crumbles. So it'll be interesting to talk to Angela. Also, Vita Shook, International President of the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, is going to be here talking about, as you know, on Friday, the Republicans held the FAA reauthorization bill hostage because they didn't want those workers having a voice on the job. So they have put us all at risk. There are some 4,000 people who have immediately lost their jobs. And more to come, so we'll talk to Vita Shook about that. Also, Bill Street's going to be here, director of the woodworking department at the International Association of Machinists. And this has been ongoing with IKEA. And, you know, IKEA's got one of these almost pristine images of, you know, just a nice yuppie place to go. They treat their employees happy, and they've kind of flown under the radar. But here in Virginia, what's going on is, you know, they've really created a work environment that is just horrible, from what I'm told. And the workers said, you know what, we'd like to organize. We'd like to have some say in how we're treated and the conditions and what we earn. So they went and said, you know what, machinists, come on in and organize us. And now a company like IKEA, who in their country promotes unionism, promotes their workers or to organize, are fighting tooth and nail and have actually hired union buster Jackson Lewis to come in and represent them. And anytime that happens, it's bad for the workers because you know it's going to get ugly. So we'll talk to Bill Street about that. So And, of course, your calls, of course, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So how many people are tired of the current dog and pony show? How many people have turned off President Obama, who is on TV right now, given his the obvious, no matter what I do, the Republicans say no. I mean, I got to be honest, I'm kind of sick of this last repeat of As the Debt Turns, where the Republicans get what they want and then still say no. I mean, is there any point where we will give them exactly what they want and they'll say yes? I'm sure they want trillions of dollars of cuts, and they want the debt ceiling to last right up until, just to make an election issue so they can hammer Obama even more. Because the reality in this is none of this is about anything principled. None of this is about anything fiscally sound. This is about politics, pure and simple. This is about taking Obama down. This is about making him look bad. And personally, at some point, I think the president, and I hope tonight he does that, I hope he comes out swinging and says, look, I've given, and they still say no. They have continued time and time again to bend over backwards. And the Republicans again and again say no. And it all comes down to, tax increases. Oh, we don't want any tax increases. No, don't tax our millionaires and billionaires. No, don't do that. We can't deficit spend. But we will raise taxes on those poor people and on those working people. And the theme I heard over the weekend is one I've heard time and time again. This idea that, there are 50% of the people in this country who don't pay any federal tax. There are 50% that don't pay any federal tax, and the rich people pay all the taxes. Well, could it be that the rich people have all the money, and the bottom half of the economy is broke? Not to mention that they pay massive Social Security tax. Not to mention that they pay sales tax on virtually every penny that they earn. They pay every other form of tax, state, local. But you don't want to talk about that. As a share of their income, I'll tell you, the person working at the fast food joint is paying a much, much higher rate of taxation than our friends in the billionaire class. But they won't talk about that. It's just, they pay big numbers. Yes, because they've got big numbers. When the top 400 people have the combined wealth of the bottom 60%, I think you have a problem. And I think you have a massive problem. And this whole thing of we're going to hold the country hostage because we're ideologically opposed to raising the debt on our children is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. But again, understand where they're coming from. They're coming from a position of we want to beat Obama. That's it. Pure and simple. And I'm hoping that the American people are smart enough to realize. And I think most of the American people get it. We want spending cuts, but we also want tax increases. If you go back to the tax code of the 60s, not the 50s where I say to go, but the 60s, we'd have to do nothing else. Our debt would be gone in 10 years. Everything would be back to just the way it should be, according to the GOP, except the businesses would have to pay their fair share, and the billionaire class would have to pay taxes. And I think the American people get that and want to go to a sane, rational period like that. In fact, according to a new survey, 56% of the folks responding said they'd vote for a candidate who supports a balanced approach of deficit reduction and spending increases, or deficit reduction and revenue increases. And the end of this, our politicians just aren't listening, or at least the Republicans aren't. I'm looking at the Democratic plans, and every one of them are pretty rational. They don't want to cut Social Security, don't want to cut Medicare, don't want to cut Medicaid. Willing to make some cuts in various programs, but asking for a little bit of increase in revenues. That seems rational to me. And I look at Geithner, who said he never thought that the Republicans would take us this close to the edge. And I say, Tim, where have you been? This is the Republican MO. This is the scorched earth mentality. This is what gets you to the brink. And this is where Democrats generally cave because they don't believe in scorched earth. And they're willing. They're willing to concede. And I look at what Donald Trump said when he was on one of those Fox and Friends TV show. He said Obama doesn't want a 6-month extension because it's not going to get reelected. He said, I think, frankly, the Republicans would be crazy unless they got 100% of the deal that they want right now to make any deal. So that means they know this. And Trump's right. You know, at the end of the day, if the economy collapses, if we end up in a major depression, if the globe goes down with us, do you think that they're going to remember that it was Boehner and the Republicans who took us down the road to hell? No, it's going to be Obama, who is the guy who's the leader of the party, the leader of the country. That's what they're going to remember. They're not going to remember that it was the Republicans who held us hostage. In 100 years, the kids who learned the history, they're going to Obama was president when the country went straight. So at the end of this, what I think has to happen is this president has to leave. He's going to have to stand up, and my position is pretty simple. If I were president, I would say, look, you Congress, you passed all this spending. You passed all of it. You were supposed to pay for it when you passed it. I'm saying you paid for it. We're going to have to pay for it. So if that means we have to raise that debt ceiling because you've already paid this, you've already passed the appropriation, you've already passed all this stuff, it's already paid for. And then I would say, as part of the Constitution, I say the debt ceiling is unconstitutional because of the 14th Amendment, that we have to pay our bills. We cannot and will not default. And tell the Republicans, take me to court. Make the courts stop me. And I think that's the kind of leadership. And what I've been talking about Democrats for years about is no one looks at them and goes, that's a guy I'd be afraid to stand up against. That's a guy that I wouldn't think is going to smack me in the mouth. Because I think many blue-collar workers, especially white blue-collar folks like me, look at the Democratic Party as kind of weak, a little limp, not willing to smack you in the mouth. As where the Republicans, you know, people have this view that they're the guys who are gonna smack you any chance they get. Even if they're wrong. I mean, the one thing you could say about Bush is he was decisive. He was decisive in the wrong direction, but he was still decisive. He picked a course of action, stayed the course. Going down this road. We're going. It may be the wrong road, but we're making good time. And people admired that on some bizarre level. Personally, I think if you're going the wrong way, which we were under the Bush years, you kind of stop the car and you look, check the map and you change directions. But for some people, that's not a quality worth emulating. And the Republicans are those people. And I got to be honest, at some point, a leader has to step forward out of the Democratic Party, and Obama better be that guy. He better stand up and say, you know what, for the good of the country, I am not letting us go down. Not going to happen. So anyway, that's what we're going to talk about tonight. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this with Angela Peoples from Campus Progress.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Fellow working class heroes, I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The United Auto Workers begins auto industry contract talks with the Detroit 3 today. Doug Cunningham reports.
The United Auto Workers will begin talks with Chrysler in Detroit today. UAW President Bob King says he wants auto consumers to know that the union is as committed to them in these talks as it is to its membership. King has spoken often of a 21st century UAW and the need to help make the auto industry competitive. King has also said during these talks that he'll be looking for UAW members to share in the upsides of the Detroit Three Auto Companies after several years of taking big concessions to help the industry survive. The UAW has a no-strike contract clause at GM and Chrysler, but at Ford there's nothing preventing the union from striking if it feels it has to. If no agreement is reached at GM and Chrysler, the union has agreed to binding arbitration to settle the contracts. Rank-and-file UAW members who are unhappy with deep concessions will be looking to make some gains. The UAW faces a September deadline to reach deals with the Detroit Three.
An already hot day for protesting hotel workers in Chicago got even hotter when the Park Hyatt Chicago turned heat lamps on Thursday morning. The workers started protesting at 5 a.m., and around 7 a.m., the lamps, typically used to warm the entrance in the winter, were triggered. Hyatt apologized for the incident Friday and said it was an isolated incident by a manager that was scheduled to retire. The hotel said it would have taken corrective action if the individual's last day wasn't already planned for Friday. At 7 a.m., Chicago was already experiencing a heat index of 90 degrees. The workers have been without a contract for nearly 2 years. One of the main sticking points is working conditions for the hotel's housekeepers. In San Antonio, 10 Hyatt workers were arrested during a protest of more than 200 hotel employees. The 10 workers sat down in a crosswalk on Market Street and were arrested by police. Unite Here has been protesting in front of the Hyatt nearly once per month for the last 2 years. This was the first time they launched civil disobedience to bring attention to the plight of housekeepers. San Francisco, Indianapolis, and a number of other cities also saw protests and boycotts on Thursday.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
So you'll remember, as we've been talking about this debt, as the debt turns, the hostage crisis, back a few weeks ago we talked about Eric Cantor. He came up with another one of his right-wing proposals. And instead of, you know, raising taxes on the millionaires and billionaires and on the billionaire hedge fund types, you know, the ones who fund his campaign, he figured, well, you know what we should do? We should go after those college kids. They don't vote anyway, right? So instead of asking the wildly well-to-do to contribute a little more to make the nation better, he decided that, you know, let's make those college kids pay interest on those loans that we've rammed down their throats from day one. And yeah, I guess you can look at this as another way to bilk some $40 billion from the next generation over the next 10 years, not to mention more fees and more penalties. That'll make the banker types really happy, don't you think? And you look at, according to the Boston Globe, there was an article, I guess it was about a month or so ago. In 2008, they claim the average debt of a college student graduating in 2008, $23,000. And I'm going, you know, at some point you got to ask yourself, is that how we value education? $23,000, and there are no jobs. So that interest, the day you're out, the 6 months after you're out, man, just keeps compiling. So today was a National Day of Action to save Pell Grants, which I think is a great thing. We should be expanding them instead of cutting them, and that's what it looks like we're going to be cutting them. That's why I've asked Angela Peoples, Advocacy Manager at Campus Progress, to come talk to us. Angela, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This is great. I really appreciate you talking about the Pell Grant.
Tell me, what was the National Day of Action about?
So basically the Day of Action was designed to raise awareness and to get the word out and get our message out about the Pell Grant. You know, the reality is that the Pell Grant enjoys wide support. Most people across the country think that, you know, students should get support and should get help. the needy students to help pay for college and to get an education. But over the past couple of decades, the Pell Grant has been level funded or underfunded in the federal government, and right now it's facing the chances of even more cuts. A program that has, you know, the purchasing power has dropped significantly. So what we wanted to do on the Pell Grant Day of Action is give people on the blogospheres, you know, on the social media networks, opportunity to really have their voices heard in a way that's unique, that, you know, our elected officials are also paying more attention to now. More and more of them are on Twitter. So we said we did email actions, allowed people to encourage them to send letters to President Obama, to their members of Congress, as well as to tweet and share their stories about why the Pell Grant is so important and get the message out there to the national debate.
And if you want to get more information, savepell.org is their website. We've got it linked at our site at thericksmithshow.com. I was talking to a kid the other day, and he said, you know, he's taking out all of these loans, these Stafford loans. And he said at the end of his 4 years, he'll be $27,000 in the hole. And he's saying that you look at the job market today, he goes, you know, when I'm done, there's no job, but this debt is still going to be hanging over my head, and I got to pay that back. And, you know, you look at this and you ask the question of our elected officials, you know, what vision do we have for the nation when we've saddled an entire generation with massive debt they can't pay back?
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And unfortunately, you know, $27,000 is kind of small potatoes when it comes to a lot of folks who are graduating from different sort of institutions of higher education. Some of them, you know, have to take out private loans in addition to the Stafford loans, which come from the federal government. Private loans have much higher interest rates, are much more costly, and don't have the, you know, flexible repayment rates that some of the federal government loans have. In the 2006, Congress enacted a couple of things that allow students to have more flexibility to pay back their loans based on their income, or, you know, a little bit of relief if they work in the public service sector. But private loans don't have that, and so a lot of students have, on top of, you know, $20,000 or $30,000 in federal loans, also have, you know, $10,000 and $20,000 in private loans from banks like Sallie Mae, with little to no job opportunities to even try to pay back those loans, let alone be sustaining for themselves or their families.
So while we're enriching the banking class and the lucrative for-profit education class, we've saddled the next generation with massive debt, and what that means is less consumption and less economic growth.
Exactly, and there's, unfortunately, there's an attitude, I think, all in Washington that, you know, well, you know, college is expensive and you should just have to borrow for it. But college wasn't always so expensive that folks had to take on a mortgage-sized debt to graduate.
No, I tell the story of a friend of mine who's a couple of years older than I, graduated from Michigan law school in the late 60s, early 70s. And she said she worked a minimum wage job all the way through undergrad into law school, went through the University of Michigan the whole way, and walked out of there with no debt, working a minimum wage job.
Yeah, those opportunities are just not there for our generation. And what we're saying is that, you know, we don't want a handout. We don't want, you know, folks to just, you know, pay for our college so we can, you know, sit in dorms and twiddle our thumbs. We are a working hard generation. We're a working class generation, and all we want is a fair opportunity, a fair shake. You know, leader Nancy Pelosi actually wanted to sit down with young folks a couple of weeks ago to hear our perspective about the debt ceiling and the negotiation, because you hear so many folks saying, oh, well, we can't leave the debt to the next generation without actually talking to us about what our priorities are. And the leader Pelosi, you know, the overarching messages from the young people in the room were not that we want to hand out, not that, you know, woe is us, saying we want to contribute, we want to do our part, we want to be a part of supporting our country's economic recovery and giving back to our communities, but we need our government to support us in doing that.
Yeah, I agree. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Angela Peoples, advocacy manager at Campus Progress. They got a website, savepell.org, about the Pell Grants. There's a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. You know, when I look at this, there's part of me, and it's the cynical part of me, that says, you know, the powers to be don't want the working class and the middle class to have the opportunity to reach further and further, so they're making that gold, that brass ring, that much further away and that much more expensive. And in the process, they're profiting from it. I mean, you look at the increase in the number of for-profit institutions and the CEO salaries of these for-profit universities, and I don't know that you can come up with any other conclusion.
Yeah, actually, we did a Campus Progress has done a lot of investigating of the issue that you just mentioned, for-profit colleges, and it's really a growing and really scary problem. You know, a lot of folks feel that the debt crisis is going to be the next sort of bubble that bursts in our economy. The student loan debt crisis is going to be the next bubble that bursts, and that sort of point is no more salient when you look at for-profit colleges. These are colleges that really recruit on a very sort of predatory fashion. They go after veterans. They go after, you know, low income and people of color and women who, you know, are single mothers or coming out of abusive relationships. And they really do. They tell their recruiters to target these certain kind of people because it's a certain kind of person that is so, you know, that they are looking for any way and any opportunity to better themselves or to change their lot in life. And these are the people that they prey on to say, hey, come to this school. We'll give you an education for really, really quickly, and you won't have to, you know, go to, like, a traditional school. That school's not for you. And the government will pay for everything. And then, you know, they take in those the for-profit institutions take in those Pell Grant dollars. They take in those student loan dollars. Then they loan them more private institutional loans because these schools are now not just schools. They're banks as well. They can give out institutional loans. And then, you know, a lot of times people are leaving without any sort of education or training, workforce training or a certificate that they can use in the job sector and anywhere to actually better their career opportunities. So now they have 10 to 20, even up to $50,000 of debt with nothing to really show for it, and their dreams and their hopes and their aspirations have really been crushed.
Yeah, and you talked about the bubble and the student loan market, and I guess there can't be a bubble that bursts because, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if you take out one of these Stafford loans, that's almost forever. There's no getting out of that. A bankruptcy judge can't write it off, from what I understand. You're saddled with that till the day you die, no matter how many fees and how many penalties and how much interest accrue.
Yeah, student loan debts are not dischargeable in bankruptcy. It's one of the only forms of credit in our country that is not dischargeable in bankruptcy. You can discharge your credit card debt. You can discharge your car. You can discharge your house. You cannot discharge your student loan. And if you go to campusprogress.org/education, you'll see there's a couple of videos up there that really highlight the issue of for-profit colleges. And that's why, you know, it's such concerning that, you know, students really have no relief. And additionally, especially at these for-profit colleges, you know, Pell Grant recipients and student veterans and, you know, people with working parents or student parents go to these schools and they exhaust their eligibility for federal financial aid, and then they can't go to another school. They can't transfer to a community college, which is often a better option for folks who are targeted by for-profit colleges because they've exhausted all of their student loan possibilities. So they have this debt that's not dischargeable, and they have no way to get another opportunity.
So let me ask you, what's the answer to this? Because in my view, I would like to see it go back to where it was with my friend who graduated in the late 60s, early 70s. You work a minimum wage job, you're working, I guess he was working 40 hours a week, you should be able to pay for the tuition, families should be able to afford it. What we're seeing now, to me, totally unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's about priorities, and you know, the conversation that I think is being happening right now about the debt ceiling and deficit reduction is a perfect time to really be talking about what our priorities are as a country. Our priorities that if you're wealthy, if your parents are wealthy, then you get to have any opportunities that you need. And if you don't come from that family, well, you know, sorry for you, you have to pay your fair share. And it's really about priorities, and I think it's really important, and it's time for our country to really be having a conversation about what it is that we want the future of America to look like. Do we want people to have from any background, which is what our country was founded on, no matter who your parents are, what your gender is, you know, what your race is, you can too have opportunities if you work hard and if you want to strive for success. But that is not the way our country is set up anymore. And it's becoming a real crisis.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And again, you know, I guess is there any legislation out there right now that would move us in that direction? Is there anything, any discussion?
During the last congressional session, we made substantial changes and some progress to making student lending, making college more affordable. It was actually a part of the health care bill that very few people know about because health care was such a big monster, but really made huge investments in the Pell Grants, shifted the way that student loans are done. So it took some of the banks out of it changed the role that banks had, and it invested a lot more in community colleges and in Pell Grants. So that's really a start. But to be honest with you, even though the Pell Grant is about $5,000, the maximum award in this upcoming year will be $5,000. That it only covers about 30% of the cost of attendance for an average four-year public institution, where, you know, in the 70s, when the program was first started, it covered almost 70% of the cost of attendance at a similar school. So we really do have a long way to go. And I think that, unfortunately, I don't see a whole lot of opportunities during this Congress to actually move forward. In fact, I see a lot of places where we could even take a step back.
Right. And some of the numbers I've seen from George Miller's office, kind of frightening. So what do we want people to do today? There's still a little time to participate in today's Day of Action. What should folks do?
Yeah, so go to the savepell.org, which is up on your site. Thank you so much for posting it. And, you know, send a letter to President Obama, because, you know, in addition to Congress, to the House and the Senate, we also have to make sure that our president knows that the Pell Grant is a priority. He's up there negotiating, trying to make a deal with Republicans, and he's, you know, so far in his administration, he's invested in education, but these are changing times. So send a letter to the president, to your member of Congress, saying, you know, talking about why the Pell Grant is important, why you think it's important for us to not make these dangerous cuts. If you're on Twitter, if you're on Facebook, there's a number of ways to take action via social media. It's hashtag or #, Save Pell, and we'd love to hear from you all. Also, if you want to continue to get involved around college affordability issues, check out campusprogress.org/get involved.
All right, Angela Peoples, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Advocacy Manager at Campus Progress. Again, savepell.org is the site they want you to go to. Again, it's linked at our site at therichsmithshow.com. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
As Bob Dylan famously wrote, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows, especially when the wind is right in your face, howling at gale force. While Washington fiddles with the knobs and levers of budget reduction, America's great working class is being blown down by harsh economic winds. Yet our country's political and financial elites, sitting in the comfort of their power centers, don't seem to see, hear, or care. If the elites just looked around, here's some of what they'd find. In Central Texas, a surge in poverty is now severely straining the area food bank, which is struggling with more than a 50% increase in demand in the past 3 years. Arizona, which has added only 4,000 jobs in the past year, has 10 unemployed job seekers for every opening, and 45,000 Arizonans are set to lose their jobless benefits in the next few months. By the end of the Great Recession in 2009, the median white household in America had lost $36,000 in net worth. Worse, the median African-American household had lost 83% of its net worth, which is now down to the financially perilous level of less than $2,200. While CEOs of major corporations have jacked up their pay by a fourth since the recession technically ended in 2009, average wages for workers have stagnated. Meanwhile, the price of such basics as food and gasoline have risen relentlessly. Real wages today are 1.6% lower than a year ago. This is Jim Hightower saying, so who is Washington working to help? Not the hard-hit workaday majority, but the $9 million-a-year CEOs and billionaire Wall Street barons who are demanding drastic budget cuts on programs that help working families, while also insisting that their own lavish fortunes be spared from even the slightest dings. What a shameful time in our history. Can America do better than this?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, if you got something on your mind, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Our quote of the day from David Olive, a business columnist with the Toronto Star. He says, I may live to see an uprising over the widening gap between rich and poor in North America. After all, it is the cause of regime change this year in North Africa and the Middle East. And, you know, you look at this issue with student loans, you look at this issue with folks trying to organize and being thrown out on the curb. At some point, the working class of this country has to stand up and fight back. It's just that simple. Anyway, let's go to the phones. We've got Tracy on line two. How are you doing tonight, Tracy?
Hey, Rick, I'm doing great. How you doing?
I am great and getting better every day.
Isn't that awesome how we can get better every day instead of, like, going backwards like Republicans?
Yeah.
Oh, what's that mean? I'm sorry.
I'm right there with you.
But my thing is, you know, this whole Pell Grant thing. I graduated from high school back in 1984 when, you know, dinosaurs roamed the earth and stuff like that. But yeah. I was just thinking how my Pell Grant and my Cal Grant pretty much covered my education. And I lived on campus, and we're talking my meal plan and everything. And I had a little part-time job. I was a RA, resident, you know, assistant or whatever. And that covered it. I was okay. I didn't come out of school in thousands, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in debt. And like the young lady that was on your show, you know, on earlier, you know, it's ridiculous. You know, there's no way in hell that a student should go to school and have to come out of school in such debt, and they don't even have, you know, this is a basic, you know, bachelor's degree. We're not even talking, you know, going on to become a doctor or a lawyer or getting their master's degree or even better yet, getting a PhD.
Yeah, I mean, it's a crime what we do to our doctors. I mean, we've set up a healthcare system where they have to come out and they don't have a choice but to seek specialties where they can make really big bucks.
And it's sick, but it's, you know, like, you know, this is my first time listening to your show.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, I was listening to Bob Kincaid earlier, and you came on right after. And I'm like, hey, who's this guy? He sounds pretty neat.
We love Bob. Does a great job over at that on Radio Network.
Bob is awesome in the word. But my thing was, this is all part of the master plan. It's, you know, we do two things. We price out everyday people, people in poverty out of education. We make it so expensive to go to college that, like you said, we're not going to go. And then, so that means you have a permanent underclass of people who have, you know, or have no education beyond high school, and that the way they're going with trying to privatize high schools, or, you know, if you go to school in Texas where they have, you know, this revisionist idea of American history, yep, you still won't have an education.
Yeah, well, we're trying to privatize it here in Pennsylvania. The governor and the Republicans are trying to push through these golden lottery tickets they're calling vouchers in the hopes that, oh, boy, we're going to have something. But at the end game is privatize it and profitize it.
Are they? Who do they think they are, Willy Wonka? This is not the golden ticket. There should not be, you should not have it so that only a certain amount of people get to a decent education.
Amen.
That is not what this country is about, what this country was about. And then you got like you said, you were talking about what's happening with the workers at IKEA. You know, here's another thing with the union. It's like, if it weren't for unions, there would be no such thing as a middle class. And it makes me sick when I hear, you know, these crazy people talking about, you know, unions are the problem and, you know, down with unions and get rid of the pensions. And what I wonder is how many of these people that were elected into office, how many of their parents were in unions?
Well, look at John Kasich in Ohio, actually trying to bust up the unions. His father worked as a mailman.
Exactly.
How
many of these union jobs pay for their education?
You look at Pat Toomey right here in Pennsylvania, senator from here. His father worked, worked a union job for years, was able to, you know, fund his children to go through school, but they turned their back on it.
And it's like, what is this? You know, I got my screw you because you're not going to get yours.
Well, that's Reaganomics. That's the whole Reagan revolution. Hooray for me and the heck with you.
You know, I look forward to maybe in, you know, going back to true American values, aside from what, you know, these crazy people say American values are, where there's no such thing as, you know, desegregation, and there's no such thing as multiculturalism or anything like that, where this country is just for, you know, America for white folk. Oh, by the way, I'm black, if you didn't catch that, but. It's like, you know, I don't care what you say. I'm as much as American as anybody else is. My money spends the same way as anybody else's does.
And we're as patriotic as anybody, and we love our country as much as anybody.
And I love my country. I can't even imagine living anywhere else. But I tell you what, if I start having to talk about, you know, say, how, you know, something about President Bachman or President Romney, I'm going to have to leave the country, and I'm pretty sure I can move to Canada as a political refugee.
Tracy, I don't want you leaving the country. We need folks like you to stand and fight back. That's what has to happen. I appreciate the call. I got to move along.
Not a problem. Thank you for what you do, and I will be listening more to your show.
And please feel free to call back anytime.
Anytime. Thank you.
Let's go to line two. I got Stosh on line two. How you doing tonight, Stosh?
Hey, Rick. How you doing today?
I'm good.
Congratulations on your show going nationwide, national, through that switch thing you talked about. Explain that again.
Stitcher. We're on the Stitcher. If you have a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app, and folks all over the country, all over the globe can download it. We've had some very nice success early on, and we're promoting it so folks all around the country can get it. And we're working on some other things as well. Got to get the word out, brother.
That's right. I'm getting ready to go viral right now. I'm not going to cuss. I'm going to keep it straight up, but we should back Obama to stand firm and let the Republicans crash the economy so we can do like people in Wisconsin did, go to the poll and have a new election. When's the, August the 2nd at the time for the
Those are the recalls in Wisconsin, yes.
That's what we need to do the day after the Republicans crash the budget, have a general election. I know it'd be
Well, we can't different. Do that. It's not constitutional, but it's a nice
thought. What they're doing is not constitutional.
And I agree. And I think what has to happen is the president has to stand up, grow a set, and say, look, I'm not going to let you, no matter how petulant you are, you know, no matter how much you scream and holler and stick your fingers in your ears, I'm going to lead this country, and I'm going to lead it not in a way that's going to cause it to go down the tubes. And I think he will if push comes to shove. I'm hoping he does.
What? Does what? Let it go down?
No. I hope he says, look, I'm the leader of this country. We're not going to default. Call it unconstitutional. Say, as I've been saying, that Congress passed these bills. They should have paid for them. So, therefore, there is no debt that we can't pay back.
We need to, I know it's unconstitutional, but do like Wisconsin did, have a general election on the 3rd. Take back America from the corporate Republicans and vote all them out and start all over again.
No, I agree on voting them all out, but we're going to have to do that in November of 2012. And I'm hoping people are outraged by what's going on. I'm hoping folks remain angry and they take it out on the Republicans on Election Day. That's what we've got to do. You know, we can't hope and wish for things that aren't possible. We've got to work for what is actually possible, and that is kicking their butts out of here next November.
We can't wait that long. They're trying to take our Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, unemployment. Can't wait that long. We need to do it the 3rd.
That's why we need, that's why we need Democrats with spines. And hopefully we can, and I agree with you. We've got to contact Obama and tell him, you know what, grow a spine. No more jellyfish Democrats. Stand up and say, be like a Republican, if you will. Stand on your principles.
That's right.
You know, I give the Republicans credit. They don't care about the country. They care about their principles. They care about their ideology. And it's this right-wing ideology that's put us in this massive hole that we're in to begin with. And it's the ideology of handing out everything to the wealth class and screwing the working class.
Like you said, when you first came on, they was talking job, job, job. Their only job intention was to unseat our president at all costs. And think about it. Blacks and Latinos didn't have enough to put him in office. A lot of white folks put Obama in office. So the corporate Republicans are really punishing them for turning to Obama instead of McCain. And that's, you know, that's vicious. They're vicious, and we need to do something about that.
And that's why we got to stay informed. We've got to stay up on the issues, and we've got to keep calling our representatives and saying, you know what? Grow a spine. Stand your ground. Stand your principles. Don't cut Social Security. Don't cut Medicare. Don't cut Medicaid. And don't talk about anything until we get some revenue enhancements from the very wealthy who've been doing very well for the last 30 years.
That's why I would like to see us go to the polls the day after they crash our economy. Go to the polls. Just, you know, I mean, it'd be different.
I hear
you.
The
world is watching.
I hear you.
And if we don't stand up, who will?
Yeah, the poll thing is not going to happen. I say go to the street, go to your state capitals, get out in the street and with your signs and screaming and carrying on. Shut this country down for a day. Show where the real power is, and it's in the people, it's in you, it's in me, it's in the folks listening. That's what has to happen. Right now, they're not hearing enough blowback. The Republicans think that they're going to be okay because the T-Twizzlers will protect them. I'm telling you, the T-Twits aren't going to help them. If they enrage the radical middle of this country, people like you and I, they are not going to be able to put the genie back in the box. No way, no how, Stosh. I appreciate the call, brother.
All right, this is Stosh, the police soul brother.
I appreciate the call.
All right, thanks, Rick.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, another call after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
I ain't never been on welfare. That's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-866-866. 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. So, Jesse, the body Ventura, or the brain, or the conspirator, whatever your idea is, former governor of Minnesota, he was in federal court on Friday over the TSA pat-down stuff. They have filed a lawsuit saying it's unconstitutional. And Jesse said, you know, in a free country, you should never feel uncomfortable being searched. This is not a free country. This is not the free country I was born in. We are a fascist nation right now. And, you know, as I've been saying, once this goes private, once they privatize the TSA, you'll never say another word again because it's private. It's not your government doing it. Anyway, let's go to the phones. I got Ike on line three. How are we doing tonight, Ike?
Well, I've been better, but let me make a point right up front. Whether or not you go to college should not determine whether or not you make a living in this country.
Agreed.
I grew up in a country where a man could make his own way with his own hands. And I think about this country I live in that has done everything they can to keep the price of my labor down. You know what really determines how much money you make in any given trade or any given sector of this economy?
The amount of people in the labor pool.
How much direct competition, how much supply of labor they've got.
Right.
They flooded mine. They did it a long time ago. I've been dealing with this for over 30 years, okay? And you're talking to somebody sitting here with a tumor who's finally realized that, guess what? Until it becomes an emergency situation, literally, I'm not going to get health care, so I'm going to have to sit here and let this thing grow until I can get help, until I have to call an ambulance. That's the country I live in. And it's really funny. Let me give you a little picture here. I'm working on a $2 million house. In a very upscale section of Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. I'm working for 13 cash. They're going to hang me with a 1099 at the end of it. All right? I got no choice. I can't find another job. I'm a 99er. I'm lucky and grateful I got this job. Well, this guy's sitting on a staircase that happens to be over the boss that hired, you know, my guy, my boss, and he's the one who makes sure the checks get out and yada, 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 okay? Yep. The guy who owns this house worked for a company, and let's just say it rhymes with Bechtel. He worked for them for 19, 20 years, and then he worked for another major corporation. He's a VP of this, that, and the other thing. He wrote his bills out on an envelope, and I happened to see it in the little trash thing that I was moving. And it caught my eye, you know. I was wondering what his electric bill was. Well, one of the entries on that whole deal where he started making out his bills was his retirement. You want to guess how much he's getting a month? $21,000 a month.
Wow.
In retirement. That's not counting stock options and the rest of it. But here's the kicker. The guy that I'm talking about sitting down the staircase, he says, well, you ought to smile a little more. And I let loose on him. I said, you know what? I would, but, you know, right now I got a tumor. I don't know exactly how I'm going to get medical care. The emergency room said it's not an emergency because I guess I'm not dying. I don't know. I'm in a world of hurt. And the guy looks back at me and goes, well, what kind of coverage do you have? And I look back at him and I go, coverage? Like, what are you, an alien? Dude, I'm working $13 an hour. I don't have a guarantee that I got a job from one day to the next. I don't have a guarantee that if I don't get paid on Friday because you screw up the paperwork, that I'll have something to eat on Saturday. I'll have gas to put in my car. Now, here's the deal. People, wake up, all right? I'm not unusual. I'm a lot of people out here, brother. I'm a lot of people. And there's a lot of people are going to be in my situation. But
well, we are in the process of creating a desperation class, and it's what we've been talking about for the longest time. As we turn our backs on labor, as we turn our backs on collective action, your story is not going to be unusual, and it's not unusual. I've talked to people who are in the exact same situation. And, you know, I've got one guy that I've conservative his whole life. Bought into the whole free market ideology, bought into the whole be responsible for yourself, bought into all of that. Now that he's off on an island by himself, he has seen the error of his ways, only now it's too late for him.
well, you know, no pity for me. I don't need it. And personally, these people, they need to get their act together, raise the debt ceiling, stop the games. And, you know, you're right. The Republicans think that they're going to be able to roll this and make it stick on Obama, or that people are not going to see through it. Those of us that are out here that are awake, we know who they are, and we know what they've done, and we know what they're going to continue to try to do. And you're right. August 3rd for your buddy Stosh, August 3rd you should have a 2 million or at least a million on the mall in Washington. I mean, swamp it and stay there, just like they did back in World War One when MacArthur went through the park and cleared out the bonus soldiers.
Yep.
If that's what it takes, they want to fight, rock and roll, baby. Let's go.
I'm right there with you, Ike. I appreciate the call, brother.
Thanks,
brother. And best of luck to you, man. You know, you look at this, and again, it's what we've been talking about, this creation of this desperation class. And one of the things I've given Obama credit for, I'm not a huge fan of the health care bill. There's a lot of want in that. There's a lot that I would have done differently, but it's going to help people get insurance. And folks like Ike could get help. Right now, and I've said this before, Jake, right now you have a situation like he has. Unless you're dying, like he said, right on the spot, they don't have to help you.
Unless he's lucky enough to get a job with benefits. The man's, he's right when he says he's pretty typical of millions of Americans. And that is, what strikes me, Rick, is why isn't there outrage on a national level? I guess the attitude is out of sight, out of mind.
And we have done such a good job of doing that.
But we should be outraged. I know somebody that's a good friend of mine in my life. She worked off all her life, and she's getting screwed by the system. She's going to lose her health care, and it is absolutely so unjust. But yet, she's just like the gentleman who just called, Ike. She's getting screwed by the system. If I can say something about what's going on with the president, I've been watching it, and I did say to you, I think in some ways the Republicans are winning. They're winning in this way. We're not talking about any the issues that we should be talking about. Jobs leaving the country. Redistribution of wealth. And most important, jobs. They keep talking about tax breaks creating jobs. Tax breaks do not create jobs. Demand creates jobs. You get demand by people having money, which means they have to be put to work. What bothers me is the Republicans keep moving the goalpost. They move the goalpost, and Obama will sit down with Boehner and say, hey, we got an agreement. The next day, Boehner's on TV, and he says, no, we can't agree to it because Obama changed the rules. My fear is that I hope he doesn't. He said he won't. He'll agree to a short term. That would be disaster. At the end of the day, I agree with you, Rick. Rather than let the Republicans just steal the day, why just didn't he use presidential authority and say, pay the bills, get it over with, take the political hate, and move on? I think in the end, they're going to blame the Republicans.
As long as the economy doesn't collapse. If the economy collapses and we have negative effect, it doesn't matter. Obama's the guy holding the keys. He's the guy, doesn't matter. He's the guy that, and he is going to be held responsible. And that's why I say there's got to be a leadership role. There's got to be someone who's going to stand in front and say, all the children can't come to some consensus, as the only adult in the room, I will take the responsibility and I will stand up and I will do what's right. Because someone's got to be an adult. Much like what's going on with the FAA reauthorization bill. Again, you know, another hostage situation. Why? Radical right-wing ideology. That's it, pure and simple. You've seen already 4,000 FAA employees now without pay. They're talking it could be upwards of 80,000 as we move down the road. Again, all for right-wing ideology. Nothing more. With no good rational explanation, just we don't want workers to organize. The heck with them. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Veda Shook, International President of the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, about that and how it's going to affect air travel in the country, how it's going to affect you. Because after all, this comes down to, as a flying person in this country, you feel safe today? You happy nobody's watching the goings on? I'm not. We're right back after this.
The world and we want it now. We're gonna take it anyhow.
Show. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The United Auto Workers begins auto industry contract talks with the Detroit 3 today. Doug Cunningham reports.
The United Auto Workers will begin talks with Chrysler in Detroit today. UAW President Bob King says he wants auto consumers to know that the union is as committed to them in these talks as it is to its membership. King has spoken often of a 21st century UAW and the need to help make the auto industry competitive. King has also said during these talks that he'll be looking for UAW members to share in the upsides of the Detroit 3 auto companies after several years of taking big concessions to help the industry survive. The UAW has a no-strike contract clause at GM and Chrysler, but at Ford there's nothing preventing the union from striking if it feels it has to. If no agreement is reached at GM and Chrysler, the union has agreed to binding arbitration to settle the contracts. Rank-and-file UAW members who are unhappy with deep concessions will be looking to make some gains. The UAW faces a September deadline to reach deals with the Detroit 3.
An already hot day for protesting hotel workers in Chicago got even hotter when the Park Hyatt Chicago turned heat lamps on Thursday morning. The workers started protesting at 5 a.m., and around 7 a.m., the lamps, typically used to warm the entrance in the winter, were triggered. Hyatt apologized for the incident Friday and said it was an isolated incident by a manager that was scheduled to retire. The hotel said it would have taken corrective action if the individual's last day wasn't already planned for Friday. At 7 a.m., Chicago was already experiencing a heat index of 90 degrees. The workers have been without a contract for nearly 2 years. One of the main sticking points is working conditions for the hotel's housekeepers. In San Antonio, 10 Hyatt workers were arrested during a protest of more than 200 hotel employees. The 10 workers sat down in a crosswalk on Market Street and were arrested by police. Unite Here has been protesting in front of the Hyatt nearly once per month for the last 2 years. This was the first time they launched civil disobedience to bring attention to the plight of housekeepers. San Francisco, Indianapolis, and a number of other cities also saw protests and boycotts on Thursday.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Once again, the House Republicans have displayed their scorched earth policy, their willingness to destroy this country because of their right-wing ideology. And what's going to happen is thousands of jobs are going to be lost, maybe temporarily, but these are wages lost. Taxes are not going to be collected, and there's going to be no one at the gates to watch over the system. If someone gets killed, I'm sure it's going to be the fault of the unions, because it always is, or it's the fault of President Obama or your spacemen from Zerg or whatever. But it's not going to be the Republicans who take responsibility. Absolutely not. And at the end of this is all about political gamesmanship. That's it. It's their ideological gamesmanship. And they have no plan. I mean, this is what this is. No plan to create jobs, no plan to fix our ailing economy. So beat up on what they can. And again, you know, it's your typical bully scenario. But here to talk about what's going on Friday, as I said, the reauthorization bill was not passed, so we've got this situation. I've asked Vita Shook, International President of the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, to come talk to us. Vita, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, you betcha.
You know, I look at this and I'm going immediately 4,000 jobs lost at a time when we can't afford it, but more importantly, safety of passengers. I'm concerned.
So I want to say that number is much, much higher than what you stated. So it's true that the FAA had a partial shutdown midnight Friday. So 4,000 FAA employees were laid off. But beyond that, there's about 90,000 workers that were working on airport projects that have come to a screeching halt.
So because we couldn't come to some rational situation, now we've got 94,000 people not making a living.
That's right. And, you know, I want to be clear that we're not talking about any kind of safety being jeopardized. So the air traffic controllers, you know, they're doing their great work every day. But a lot of forward-thinking work that's happening on building airports to meet today's needs and, you know, we're a world-class country, world-class aviation system, to actually put that into action is actually put on ice right now.
Well, I mean, if you look at the last couple of months, I've seen two accidents that I can think of, one at LaGuardia, one up in Boston, that highlights the fact that our airports are overworked and undersized. I don't want to miss one day of people working on those problems. Sorry.
That's right. And I mean, these, you know, and the fact is that there's $1.5 billion of money set aside for airport improvement projects beyond what's stopping work right now. And it's difficult to actually get companies to commit to that work when we're sitting on over 20 extensions to the FAA reauthorization bill. So let me just talk about that for just a minute. So this is a bill that's very standard that actually funds the existence of the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, so to promote safe air travel. Safe skies, safe airports, and moving on into the next generation of what air travel looks like. And so they have been unable for quite some time now, years now, from actually passing a comprehensive FAA reauthorization bill. So what they've been doing are short-term extensions, really kicking the can, if you will.
Right.
And so this most recent one, they actually – instead of just passing another short-term extension, they put in this issue of the essential air service. But what they had done before was the House had passed, they put a labor provision into the bill that's about funding safe air travel, nothing to do with labor, but they put in a labor provision that would strip Democratic voting rights for people who want to form a union. And so they're trying to force the hand that they need to stick it to people who want to join a union, because, gosh forbid, you know, people could actually join a union. I mean, as it is right now, you can join any church you want or any organization you want, but, you know, God forbid you actually try to join a union. And so the standard that they want to go back to, how it used to really roll back the clock, is that a majority of all the workers eligible would have to actually affirmatively vote for the union. So you'd have to have a greater than 50% turnout just of yes voters.
Right.
And so let me be clear, not one single member of this Congress from any party would be elected right now under those existing rules.
Correct.
That they're proposing, right?
So, you know, again, you look at this, and I think folks need to understand, if we ran our political system like this, and this is what I think the Democrats should do just as kind of as a show. Say, okay, we'll go along with your FAA reauthorization bill. We'll steal those rights away from workers as long as every person who doesn't vote in the next general election, that non-vote will be counted as a Democratic vote.
Okay, I'll try that one out.
I mean, but that's what they're asking us to buy into. It's the same
scenario. And it's a double standard. And so they're just, really, it's this real ideological, very much concerted actions in state battles. And, this is the one, or, you know, at the national level. So this is the one progressive national change law that's happened to benefit workers' ability to join a union. The one change of small agency, the National Mediation Board, just for aviation and rail employees, and they want to strip it back out.
Just absolutely amazing.
So then, I mean, what the impact is, you know, so there's this whole thing, you know, where they're going to, you know, want to do this one issue for workers, but when they're talking this overall bigger package on where we're at on deficit reduction or anything else, this is stopping $200 million a week in revenue taxes for people who buy tickets, for FAA taxes, $200 million a week.
Wow.
And almost 100,000 people laid off because of this. So it's a job killer. It's a revenue killer. And there's a, you know, a really broad effect, a ripple effect from all these people out of work. I mean, I am a flight attendant, and I think about it that this is going to affect the airlines that we represent. You know, if those families that are laid off, you know, can't afford to take the summer plans that they were, you know, saving for, you know, this just trickles down. And, you know, just it, and it's across the board, 35 states, Puerto Rico, District of Columbia, very good, hard-working people laid off for a really, really sham reason.
Yeah, I've taken the position that I think the Republicans' end game here is that they don't have answers for how to create jobs. They don't have answers on how to fix the economy. They really don't have any vision or any idea what to do. So it's about destroying the president. It's about destroying the economy.
Well, in this case, it's about destroying jobs. I mean, for no reason, this particular ideological move, I mean, it has real impact. You know, 100,000 people laid off for ideology. Job killer.
Here again, I mean, you look what's going on with the debt ceiling. They will take us to the brink of absolute destruction for their ideology. And I guess the question I have is, you know, you look at the labor part of this, and yeah, that's their blind faith ideology. But the other part of this is starve the beast.
Yep.
This idea of if we defund, if we stranglehold it, then it'll privatize and we'll be able to make more profit off of it.
There's that. And then there's also, you know, trying the arching theme of trying to defund you know, unions' ability to actually be the voice of working families, to actually have a place in that discussion. So you see those rights stripped out, rug pulled out from under across the board. And so they're trying to do it here as well, you know, to keep people from actually joining unions.
You know, the more I look at this, you know, to me it comes down to the simple reality that I think the deltas of the world and the FedEx of the world, those are the folks who have really funded this whole push, because they don't want unions anywhere near them.
Yeah, so I've been involved with helping Delta flight attendants who want to form a union in three different elections now. And so the recent election was under this existing rule change. And, you know, Delta did pull out all the stops, and we actually do have some charges pending with the National Mediation Board, the agency that oversees our ability to form a union. And but we lost, you know, but that's not good enough for Delta. You know, they need to make sure that they can do whatever it takes to roll back that rule so that they can keep the flight attendants from having a voice at work. It's really unfortunate because, you know, I come from an airline where, you know, we have a positive working relationship with management. It's based on mutual respect, and it's a profitable airline.
You know, I look at this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in some of the Delta situations, they actually made, from what, this is just what I've been told, and this will help me if I'm wrong here, but the company actually made overtures to send people away so they couldn't participate. So that vote would have been counted as a no vote.
I don't have reports on that from, you know, from a flight attendant perspective. I know that they've absolutely sent flight attendants into Washington, D.C. to lobby, positive space travel, kept potential revenue away from people buying tickets to send people up to lobby against their best interest.
That's amazing stuff.
It's very amazing. Hey, if you would like, do you have stats for, you're in Pennsylvania on some of the, do you know what the layoff numbers look like?
No, I don't.
Pennsylvania alone?
I don't.
So just in Pennsylvania alone, I mean, I've got the stats for all the states. We're talking 1,000 jobs out the door, 1,000 people laid off. And I mean, people are hurting, and add another 1,000 to that mix, and those are people that can't, you know, afford any extras in a time like this. And I'm looking at, like, Wilkes-Barre. Am I saying that right?
Wilkes-Barre,
sorry. Tower construction. That value of that contract is over $14 million. And there's been a stop work order. So
that's a community that cannot really afford to lose another job.
No, it's just, but I mean, that's like a major project, right? And then there's other construction happening in Oakdale, in Pittsburgh, in Erie. And, I mean, these are, you know, this is real stuff, right? So we've got, and then there's been FAA employees that are laid off in those locations, too. So this impacts a lot of communities across the country and, you know, the majority of the states.
So let me ask you this. How do we change this? How do we get the Republicans to come around? How do we get Democrats with a spine? How do we push this in the right direction?
I think those are good questions. So the three heavy hitters that need to be held accountable on this are MICA, who is oversees the committee. We've got and then Cantor, and then Boehner. So those three, you know, are the heavy hitters that need to, you know, be reminded of the double standard that they're seeking to do here. And then for the Democrats in the Senate, because this is what they want in the House legislation, so they're, you know, trying to play this high stakes, unnecessary game of chicken. And the Senate, in the Senate bill, it does not include stripping out that progressive rule change. So we need to ensure that not one senator that's been with us all along blinks. So they can't buy into this game and got to stand strong that the labor, you know, stripping out of a progressive labor provision has no place in an FAA reauthorization. I mean, what's really sad is that bill could have tremendous, and they could actually pass a meaningful bill, get aside from, you know, just passing extensions. I mean, there's significant improvements in there for a next-gen, you know, system to actually move, you know, our systems forward. There's other protections for, you know, safety on the job. I mean, all kinds of good things that are in there, but they can't just get it together and pass the bill.
At a time when we need jobs, here's a place where we could actually create some. Here's a place where we could actually, improve our infrastructure, because when I checked the civil engineers website with the gradings that they gave a couple years ago, the airport's got a D. We could use some serious upgrades.
We can, and especially if our airlines and our country are to compete on a global scale. We really significantly do need to upgrade these airports. And as I mentioned at the top, that there's $1.5 billion sitting there in federal funding to improve the airports. But those contracts aren't going to be bidding, you know, aren't going to get bid if they think that the, you know, Congress can't get it together to actually pass the bill. So why would a contractor want to bid on a job with that much uncertainty? So not only has the work stopped on these existing projects, but nobody else is going to want to be bidding on any future projects because they could find themselves in the same situation.
Yeah, they could throw a bunch of money down a hole and there'd be nothing at the end of
it. Exactly.
So what we have to do is we have to contact our representatives, as always. I mean, I've got mine on speed dial. That's how important it is to me. But for more information, if you want to take a look at this, go to the AFANet.org website. That's the Association of Flight Attendants website. There's a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Vita Shook's name. It'll take you right there. Vita, I appreciate the time. Thank you for the information. And, we look forward to having you back again real soon.
My pleasure. Keep on pushing on. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is where working people come to talk.
Back to America. Rick Smith.
As Bob Dylan famously wrote, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows, especially when the wind is right in your face howling at gale force. While Washington fiddles with the knobs and levers of budget reduction, America's great working class is being blown down by harsh economic winds. Yet our country's political and financial elites, sitting in the comfort of their power centers, don't seem to see, hear, or care. If the elites just looked around, here's some of what they'd find. In Central Texas, a surge in poverty is now severely straining the area food bank, which is struggling with more than a 50% increase in demand in the past 3 years. Arizona, which has added only 4,000 jobs in the past year, has 10 unemployed job seekers for every opening, and 45,000 Arizonans are set to lose their jobless benefits in the next few months. By the end of the Great Recession in 2009, the median white household in America had lost $36,000 in net worth. Worse, the median African-American household had lost 83% of its net worth, which is now down to the financially perilous level of less than $2,200. While CEOs of major corporations have jacked up their pay by a fourth since the recession technically ended in 2009, average wages for workers have stagnated. Meanwhile, the price of such basics as food and gasoline have risen relentlessly. Real wages today are 1.6% lower than a year ago. This is Jim Hightower saying, so who is Washington working to help? Not the hard-hit workaday majority, but the $9 million a year CEOs and billionaire Wall Street barons who are demanding drastic budget cuts on programs that help working families, while also insisting that their own lavish fortunes be spared from even the slightest dings. What a shameful time in our history. Can America do better than this? Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
We need to stand united, for undivided we shall never fall. Remember all, we need to trust in and then forever call on our brothers and our sisters. And are you and I aware? You and I both know that we can't rely on it. The time is prime, past the line, ain't no mistake. For union resurrection, the anger has awakened. Has awakened the sleeping giant. Come on, yeah, we can do it. We need to revive, react, and re-up the labor movement.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. The poem, The Scab, written by Jack London. He writes, after God had finished with the rattlesnake, the toad, and the vampire, he had some awful substance left, which he made a scab. A scab is a two-legged animal with a corkscrew soul, a water brain, a combination backbone of jelly and glue. Where others have hearts, he carries a tumor of rotten principles. When a scab comes down the street, men turn their backs and angels weep in heaven. And the devil shuts the gates of hell to keep him out. No man or woman has the right to scab so long as there's a pool of water to drown his carcass in or a rope long enough to hang his body with. Judas was a gentleman by comparison with a scab for betraying his master. He had character enough to hang himself. A scab has not. Esau sold his birthright for a mess of pottage. Judas sold his Savior for 30 pieces of silver. Benedict Arnold sold his country for a promise of a commission in the British Army. A scab sells his birthright, country, his wife, his children, and his fellow men for an unfulfilled promise from his employer. Esau was a traitor to himself. Judas was a traitor to his God. Benedict Arnold, a traitor to his country. A scab, well, a scab is a traitor to his God, his country, his family, and his class. And the reason I bring that up, and it's a very famous poem written by Jack London, is I don't know if you saw in the newspaper recently, if you're living in the Lancaster area, but there is a company that has locked out their employees. Armstrong World Industries has, while negotiating, kicked its 260 unionized employees to the curb, and they are seeking temporary employees. They're going to pay $12 an hour, no benefits, of course. Now, understand, the unionized workforce, they make about $18 an hour, and they have benefits. So you scabs, the people who are going to cross the line and basically screw these people over, you're going to make $6 less, plus no benefits. So that's what they think of you from the start. They've got their management people working on it, and they're bringing people from around the country that they can get to cross this this lockout line. And they even admit that these are temporary jobs. They admit it fully. You know, they say that they're, once the contract is ratified, the union employees are back to work. They're back on the job. And the temporary workers, well, you go away. They're going to use you like, well, the second oldest profession. And I look at the job that they want you to come and do for $12 an hour. And when I was a kid, Jake, someone who would cross a picket line, someone who would get involved in crossing over a lockout line like this, give you a story. My grandfather, when I first went to move in with my grandparents, the first, really only instruction he ever really gave me about people were that you know what over there. You stay away from them. And he had a kid about my, he had a, like a grandkid about my age. And, you know, can I go play with him? No, you stay away from them. When I got older, I asked why. Turns out the guy who lived across, you know, catty corner from us had crossed a railroad picket 50 years ago. And my grandfather never, and he wasn't even with the railroad. My grandfather was a truck driver. My grandfather never forgave him. Because that generation, you, a scab was a scab was a scab. And you didn't deal with them. And in fact, as I remember it, nobody dealt with him. And here again, he didn't even work for the railroad but a couple of months. And once everything was back to the way it was, they sent him packing, used, and discarded. And I the reason I bring that up is I look at this situation and I go, who in their right mind would for $12 an hour, no benefits, take a temporary job that could be a couple of weeks at most and put themselves in a situation like that? It makes no sense to me at all.
Well, the companies are counting on the fact that there's a lot of desperate people out there. People that aren't using the brains that God gave them. They aren't thinking it through, but they're desperate nevertheless.
I mean, and the amazing thing is they're saying, yeah, we're going to use you, we're going to abuse you, but, you know, at the end of the day, once those other workers come back, you're to the curb. And, you know, surprisingly, I think people will sign up for that, and I hope they don't. I hope the message is you know what, we're not going to do that. And I think what has to happen is we have to train people again, to think in the mentality of, you know, I think the one guy explained it to me right, and this, years and years ago, you know, a scab in this situation is kind of a guy who knows you and your wife are having problems. And then he horns his way in, telling her what a no good, you know, this or that you are. So that he, you know, he comes, he gets his, and then the two of you break up and he disappears. That's a scab.
Well, I think you used the right analogy. You mentioned the profession of prostitution. And in many ways, those who turn their back in the very organization that got them a good life are prostituting themselves. They're usually people that, quite frankly, the ones that I knew, not a lot of moral value to them. They really didn't care about people. It was all about them and their little world. And ultimately, their self-absorption caused them to do something that they, many of them, regretted. Where I worked, I literally knew, true fact, I literally knew people who worked around people who crossed the picket line, and for 30 years, never talked to them.
And we need to go back to that. We need to return to a time where your honor was part of it. The fact that, you know, my grandfather always said, you got two things in this world. You got your stones and you got your word. And you don't break either of them for anyone. And you never break your word. And again, you know, you look at this, and this is just a bad situation. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. The West Virginia Gazette, they've reported that hospital executives in West Virginia are closely monitoring the deficit talks because there's a lot in there for them. The Medicare funding, if it gets cut, they're saying could literally shut down rural health sites across the state. They're saying if reimbursement rates are cut, he said, what we're going to see is, and he says, I do believe, the closure of some of our hospitals and maybe even physician practices associated with the hospitals. So what's happening is, you know, again, the people who are closest to the margin will be the people who suffer the most. Do you think a rural area in West Virginia can afford to lose a hospital? You know, I know people who live in West Virginia, and they say, look, it's a couple hours till we get to a hospital. You know, it's you know, you might get to the family doctor, but if you do any real tests, it's a couple hours. And now we're talking about doing away with some of that. And understand, the rural areas are the ones that are going to be harmed the most because there aren't as many people. It's just absolutely amazing to me. And today we were out at the HCPA Healthcare Pennsylvania rally they held outside of Tim Holden's office here in Harrisburg to highlight the need not to gut Medicaid. And all of the talk that I keep hearing from the Republicans is, you know, there's a good place to cut because those are lazy people. Those are people who aren't responsible for themselves. And I love that frame because it's simplistic enough for the simple-minded to grasp it. But it's not reality-based. You know, I look at Ike, the guy who called earlier. I feel for him because our country has turned their back on him. And we have a medical system, you know, because, you know, as the one guy told me, we already got it, universal health care. You're sick, you just go to the hospital. And I said, yeah, if you've fallen out of a tree and broke both your legs, they'll probably set them. But if in like X case you have a tumor, you're not dying right now. We don't have to treat you. Welcome to America. No job, no insurance, death. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this with Bill Street, director of the woodworking department at the International Association of Machinists. We're right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, for some time now, we've been talking about this situation in Danville, Virginia, with the IKEA plant down there and the workers that are trying to join and form their union. And I guess on Wednesday is going to be the vote where some 320 workers from this plant go to cast their ballot. And what I find interesting is the local editorial boards, of the newspaper there, basically saying, well, we've never supported unions and we're not going to start now. So you gotta kinda just go, this is trouble. But here to talk to us about the campaign is Bill Street, director of the woodworking department at the International Association of Machinists. GoIAM.org is the website. We've got a link on our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. Bill, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
I look at this and we've been talking about this for some time. The hope is that the workers have the opportunity to fairly and squarely vote to have a union without interference from the company, but I see Jackson Lewis front and center.
Yeah, you sure do. The Sledwood's done a few things, although to be real candid. They certainly haven't run as negative a campaign as Jackson Lewis is capable of running and has run in the past against us. So I will give them credit for that. But the first thing they did right out of the box was intervene and block these workers' right to self-determination to decide who they want in their unit. And they jammed in 30 supervisors who they call team captains, which would be about 10% of the voting pool. And as if you look at union elections around the country, it's a pretty rare vote where the union wins by more than 10%. So we started right out of the get-go 10% down. And then they did their what I call their handshake and Gatorade campaign. Supervisors who these workers haven't seen in 3 years were showing up on the floor and patting them on their back and handing them Gatorade and asking them how their children were. And, man, as of June 20th when we filed, up until yesterday, these supervisors just fell in love with these workers overnight.
Yeah, I've been reading the editorial, and they've just, they've bent over backwards to change, and, they'll be different this time. And I go, they can be different with a representative standing next to them.
Absolutely. In the editorial, they cited that the company did an end to mandatory overtime, and it only took the union 2 years of pounding away on them to get them to do that. And then that lasted. They announced the official policy in the middle of, I believe it was May, and on June 11th, they forced them to work mandatory overtime. The editorial writer forgot to point that one out.
Well, when you start off an editorial saying this newspaper has never been a supporter of labor unions, I don't think the rest of the body of the article is going to be any different.
Well, I'll tell you what I wanted to do. I wanted to, and maybe I still will after the election, is go into their archives and see if in Danville the same paper supported slavery, opposed, Medicare and Medicaid, and it's sort of like this is just one more in a long list of editorials that I don't think we're going to be on the right side of history.
Yeah, I look at this campaign though, and it's like many across the country where we've pitted workers against workers and communities against communities. And at the end of the day, I look at this and I say, this is an opportunity for people to stand up and fight back against the corporate greed. Are you hopeful for Wednesday? I mean, is there a sense of that there's a possibility here? Granted, you've said, they've already stuffed, the numbers there with a bunch of management people, which I guess the other question is that something you're going to file on with the labor board?
Well, first, the good news, and I don't want to jinx myself, but we've done something a little different in this campaign, which is starting a week ago, we've asked folks to join the Machinist Union. And so far, 54% of the folks have joined the Machinist Union. And so I have to believe if they're willing to join the union, they're going to vote for the union on Wednesday.
Well, I'm hopeful for them.
So I think they're going to prevail. In terms of what to do about the supervisors in the unit, we're going to go to the election. I'm hopeful the workers will prevail, and then we'll deal with it in bargaining.
Right. Let me ask you this, Bill Street. In looking at the company as a whole, because I know in Sweden they actually encourage workers to join unions and be part of a collective there. Why is it that here in this country they seem to think that it's okay to deny those rights, it's okay to block and obstruct?
The argument Swedwood uses and the argument many multinationals use as they go around the world is they say we're just following local conditions. And Lord knows, we wouldn't want to come in and upset the local situation.
Oh, heavens no.
Heavens no. And it's odd because, of course, when our U.S.-based multinationals would go into Asia or into South America, they would use the same arguments. And now there's some irony in that Swedish labeled multinational, though actually chartered out of the Netherlands and controlled by a trust out of Luxembourg, is using the same arguments in Danville, and they're saying, you know, we don't want to make the wages too high. We want to put ourselves right in the middle of the local wage pool.
Right.
And it's sort of like, so how does that help anybody? You know, having more low-wage jobs is not the answer anywhere in the United States.
Well, isn't this another example of how broken our labor laws are in this country, that you're able to pit areas against each other? You know, I look at the Boeing situation where they're trying to pit, Washington against South Carolina, even though that has nothing to do with the situation, but they're trying to pit workers across the country against each other.
Absolutely. The woodworker piece of the machinist have a long history. In the mid-60s, the plywood mills abandoned the Pacific Northwest and moved to the U.S. South to exploit cheap fiber and cheap labor. And our members for about 15 years put a surtax on themselves to fund organizing activity in the U.S. South. And we came in and organized a good portion of the wood products industry in the South. And so this is just a different version of the same thing, only this time they're coming over from a country in Europe that has over 90% union density. And 2 weeks ago, we had the president of the Swedish Woodworkers Union over here visiting with Swed woodworkers, and it was an eye-opening experience for both of them. Our members in Danville would say, well, we get 4 days of vacation a year that we're allowed to pick the date we take it on. And Peo, the international president from Sweden, would say, well, we get 27 days by law. And then we start to bargain more from there.
Right. And I was going to ask, you know, have you been working with the folks in the Netherlands and in Sweden to educate the workforce in this country? Because I think a lot of us don't realize how good workers in other countries have it. I talk to people here, think we've just got, you know, it's the cat's meow here.
Yes, it was, like I said, we had the president of the Swedish woodworkers over, and it was a very eye-opening experience for about a 40 or so Swed woodworkers that he had a chance to talk to while he was here. And when he describes their working conditions and their collective bargaining and their social contract, you just watch these American workers' eyes just get, you know, big as golf balls as they try to comprehend a situation so much different than what they have. And conversely, when I had an opportunity to go over to Sweden and the Netherlands and explain to those workers the situation in the U.S., they simply flat out don't believe me.
It's amazing. And, you know, again, you know, I've had these conversations with folks, which is why I think it's so important that we have these conversations to educate workers in this country about, you know, others have it pretty well. You go to some of the countries that have good, you know, high union density, they actually get to see their families every once in a while. And I'm hoping, I got to be honest, I'm hoping that the folks in Danville, Illinois, or Danville, Virginia, will look at this and say, you know what, here's our opportunity.
Well, we were able to put an ad in the Danville paper today, and in the background of the ad were 82,000 signatures of people from around the world, although mostly from North America, who had signed a petition in support of the worker struggles here in Danville. And the ad points out that the population of Danville is about 42,000 people. And twice that many, or just about, had signed this petition as a way of letting the folks in Swedwood, Danville, know there's a much larger world out there. And that appeared this morning, and I just had one of our activists call me a few moments ago saying, Bill, I went into the Piggly Wiggly, and I came right off of work, so I still had my uniform on, and dozens of people came over to me and said, you know, God, we hope you win on Wednesday. And she goes, and then I went over to the mall to pick up something else, and people I don't even know were coming up to me and saying, we're with you, and you know, good luck in this struggle. And so she was really uplifted by that. And I think there is something to the old notion that we tend to forget about in labor, which is the concept of labor solidarity.
Absolutely, because I that's exactly what I was thinking. It's that kind of community, it's that kind of solidarity that we have to resurrect.
Absolutely, and I'll trade off a negative editorial in the local newspaper any day of the week for 15 citizens in the community coming up to one of our folks and they're in their Sweatwood uniforms and saying, we support your struggle.
Well, I'm looking forward to Wednesday, as I know you are, and the folks there in Danville, Virginia. We'd love to have you back on when the victory happens. In fact, we'd love to talk to a couple of your workers going forward.
As soon as we win, I'm sure I'll have workers being able to take the risk to come forward and talk.
Fantastic. Bill Street, I appreciate your time, brother.
Thanks, Rick, and I appreciate what you're doing educating the your listeners around your market area.
Thanks so much. Bill Street, Director of Woodworking, the Woodworking Department there at the International Association of Machinists. Again, the website, goiam.org. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. We're going to take a quick break right back after this.
I'm fighting till the end, and we're not gonna break tonight, and we're not gonna bend. Some say the union's down, but I asked around, and everybody said, this is a union town, a union town, all down the line. This is a union town, all down the line. And if they come to strip our rights away, we'll give them hell every time. This is a union town, a union.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing light is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Official supporter of Palin Santorum 2012, The Rick Smith Show.
With the devil, that's who you'd be running with if you were running with Rick Santorum. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So, the big documentary hit the theaters, The Undefeated, which is, of course, the Palin-commissioned version of herself. I guess she had complete control over how it was put together and the whole nine yards. They have... You gotta love this, man. They put it in 14 Tea Party friendly venues, 14 theaters and heavy Tea Party areas, and it pulled in about $24,000. So evidently, Undefeated has been unattended. Because you think about it, you know, what is it, $8 a ticket?
You mean you didn't go?
I'm waiting for it. It's coming out on pay-per-view. So if you have DirecTV or Dish Network or Time Warner Cable, you can pay a couple bucks right there, and I'm sure they'll have like a $1.99 night. Then, you know, hey, maybe. Who knows? But here again, you know, that's $24,000. And they ran it in 14 theaters, and now it's out. It's all gone. So is that kind of a message for her for the 2012 election, that nobody really cares? You can't get more than...
You mean the lines weren't backed up for blocks and blocks with...
What, 3,000 people went to see it?
Oh, that's pretty bad.
3,000, that's it?
That's pretty bad.
That's pretty pathetic. So I'm hoping she does run.
Wow.
Well, look, she quit the bus tour. I mean, really stop and think about what she did on that whole bus tour. If I were one of those people out near Gettysburg...
Yep, I'd be very angry.
I'd be flipping mad. I'm going to stand out there all day waiting with my sign all excited. I'm going to see the Palin bus. And she never comes because, oh, we're being secretive with our agenda. I thought it was a media tour. Here's some good news for the folks in Wisconsin. Scott Walker, their governor, of course, the Republican, they ran through their voter ID bill where you had to have like a driver's license or a state ID or something. So they rammed this through like thieves in the night, kind of like they're trying to do here in Pennsylvania. So they ram it through. They said, well, you know, we're going to make sure everyone gets an opportunity and we're going to make sure we pay for it, blah, blah, blah. Well, what they've done is they have closed 10 driver's license centers. Just days after it's been passed. So now you're going to have folks having a harder time getting to those places that are open. And again, you're going to start seeing, oh, for budget reasons, of course, it's all for budget reasons. You're going to start seeing their hours shortened. You're going to start seeing offices closed on weird days. Also, they keep the voters down. It's going to happen here. Write it down on a calendar. If they pass it, it's going to happen here. They're going to do the same thing. Because it's all about stealing your right to the ballot box. And they know in 2012 that they get a big turnout, they're going to lose. They've got their energized T-Twizzler base, and you know they're going to get them out. Because their T-Twizzler bases, they're thrilled about Michelle Bachmann. They're thrilled about Rick Perry. And I think Rick Perry's the guy. Everyone keeps saying Mitt Romney. Not so sure. I think Perry's the guy. He's got that Texas stink on him. But at the end of this, he's the prophet. And, of course, the numbers now in a new Florida poll have him at the top of the GOP poll. So I'm saying that he gets on the roll with some money. I think he's the guy. He's who worries me the most.
He came out with a statement either today or yesterday about the gay marriage issue. That's legal now in more states than it used to be. And you know what his position was? And this might hurt him with some of the conservatives. His position was, well, that was appropriate.
States
for
rights.
That state.
It's a state's rights issue.
Yeah, I know. But, however, some of the conservatives, to them, it's a moral issue.
But how can you, again, he's trying not to be a hypocrite. How can you come out and say, I'm for states' rights, but not this state's rights?
You're right.
The whole argument against abortion, and the right keeps making this out of half of their mouth while saying, well, it should be illegal everywhere. We should criminalize it. They're saying, well, it's a states' rights issue, so the federal government should get out of it. Thinking that we'll be able to change it at the state level. Not going to happen, but it's a nice argument. And this is one of those moments where you have to be true to your ideology. And I give him credit for at least having a worldview that's semi-consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So good for him. And he still scares the hell out of me.
He might have been looking ahead and saying, look, if I want to have national appeal, this should be my position. I don't trust the man. I mean, anybody that would advocate secession is you know, doodle-doodle-doodle-doodle.
Yeah, he's the prophet, did you know?
Yeah, right.
Him and David Koresh, right there.
Oh.
Another Texan.
Oh, that's someone I want to be go down in history as a bosom buddy, right?
There you go. Do what you got to do, man. Ron Paul, another Republican hopeful, or I'm saying nopeful. There's no chance for Ron Paul. But he's saying that the August 2nd deadline, not really hard and fast, not the thing. He was out today in Iowa, And he says, you know, it's an artificial date. And he doesn't believe that the Moody's, that Moody's saying that they're going to downgrade our AAA credit rating. He doesn't believe that. He says it's misleading. And again, there's this view out there that, you know, we're so exceptional that no bad things could happen in this, that, you know, the rest of the world will just kowtow to us. And there's part of me that goes, you know, once you, we're this close to the end of the road, let's see how exceptional we really are.
You know what really does scare me? It's not just in this issue, Rick, and you brought up something which I do believe is true. For instance, take their position on how do we recover? How do we recover out of this doldrum in the economy? Well, their position is you lower taxes. Well, you know what? I bet you if you ask people from 15 different countries that were educated, at least 14 of them would say, no, you need the government. You need the government to infuse money into that economy, prime that old pump, create demand. But yet, here we are. Here we have a core of people who, unfortunately, in my estimation, have the power. And they're saying, no, the answer is more tax breaks. In a down economy, where are they coming from?
Well, I'm really in the perfect world. In the Cato Institute Ivory Tower and the Heritage Foundation's Ivory Tower and these think tanks where you come up with these models, that would actually work. I mean, if you're talking purely models, you're taking human tendencies out, you're taking greed out of the equation, you're taking reality out of the equation. On paper, works nicely. It's like, you know, when I sit down and when I was coaching football and I would write up those football plays, everyone scored a touchdown.
You're
now,
saying,
when we played the game, they lost 10 yards each, but, you know, on paper, they look really good.
What you're saying in a theoretical world, those positions might work.
Theoretically, if you gave all of that money that the Bush tax cuts handed out, you gave that out, and they consumed all of that money. We gave millions of dollars to the top 1%. If that top 1% used all of those millions of dollars locally, and they bought products, and they built factories, and they did all of the things that they say we need to do, then, yeah, of course, it would work because you're infusing capital into the economy. You're getting things going. The pump is primed. But that's not what's happening. What's happening is they're taking that, they're hoarding it, or they're investing it overseas. It's not helping us. What you need is you need people with money in their pocket to spur local economies. It all comes back down to local. It comes back down to domestic. It doesn't help us any to give the investor class hundreds of millions or billions of dollars to invest in China to ship over more cheap plastic crap that we're going to buy on credit. That doesn't help us. It doesn't help us at all. What helps us is if you have that money and you say, we've got demand. And if the federal government would have done what I said to do from the beginning and say, we're going to order 10 million solar panels, who's going to make them? With an order like 10 million solar panels, you don't think some enterprising entrepreneur wouldn't say, I can do it, and start hiring people and building factories and pumping out product? Of course they're going to. And that's what the rebates were supposed to do. But again, we underfunded them. But on paper, and this is where, you know, maybe we disagree, on paper, their plans are solid. On paper. In the real world, not happening.
Well, I mean, I think you're forgetting a simple part of that equation, Rick. We did that for 8 years under George Bush, and what did it get us?
Their argument was we didn't do enough of it. There wasn't enough giving to the wealth class. There wasn't enough deregulation. So it didn't work.
Correct.
And I'm saying we did plenty. I've been trickled all over.
Correct me if I'm wrong. In 8 years, I believe, yes, he created 1.5 million but lost 2.5 million. He's about 1 million in the hole. I don't think those are numbers where you could say, it was just an overwhelming positive victory.
And I agree with you. But this is the right-wing ideology. This is their blind faith. This is their religion. This is it. Tax cuts are all they can run on because they know they've done a masterful job of training the less than thoughtful, the over-misinformed, that tax cuts are good. And I agree. Tax cuts are good for the guy making $30,000 a year. Tax cuts are good for the guy making $50,000 a year. Tax cuts are good for people who consume every penny that they earn on food and clothing and housing and keeping a middle class existence. Well, it's good.
Here's one thing that I think sometimes they downplay. If you have a strong middle class and they are creating jobs and they are spending money, guess what? The rich are going to get richer because they have the money and they have invested in the right businesses. Many of them own businesses. They are going to prosper in that system.
Well, but again, that isn't part of their ideology. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Ron Moore. He's running for city council. Right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The United Auto Workers begins auto industry contract talks with the Detroit 3 today. Doug Cunningham reports.
The United Auto Workers will begin talks with Chrysler in Detroit today. UAW President Bob King says he wants auto consumers to know that the union is as committed to them in these talks as it is to its membership. King has spoken often of a 21st century UAW and the need to help make the auto industry competitive. King has also said during these talks that he'll be looking for UAW members to share in the upsides of the Detroit 3 auto companies after several years of taking big concessions to help the industry survive. The UAW has a no-strike contract clause at GM and Chrysler, but at Ford there's nothing preventing the union from striking if it feels it has to. If no agreement is reached at GM and Chrysler, the union has agreed to binding arbitration to settle the contracts. Rank-and-file UAW members who are unhappy with deep concessions will be looking to make some gains. The UAW faces a September deadline to reach deals with the Detroit 3.
An already hot day for protesting hotel workers in Chicago got even hotter when the Park Hyatt Chicago turned heat lamps on Thursday morning. The workers started protesting at 5 a.m., and around 7 a.m., the lamps, typically used to warm the entrance in the winter, were triggered. Hyatt apologized for the incident Friday and said it was an isolated incident by a manager that was scheduled to retire. The hotel said it would have taken corrective action if the individual's last day wasn't already planned for Friday. At 7 a.m., Chicago was already experiencing a heat index of 90 degrees. The workers have been without a contract for nearly 2 years. One of the main sticking points is working conditions for the hotel's housekeepers. In San Antonio, 10 Hyatt workers were arrested during a protest of more than 200 hotel employees. The 10 workers sat down in a crosswalk on Market Street and were arrested by police. Unite Here has been protesting in front of the Hyatt nearly once per month for the last 2 years. This was the first time they launched civil disobedience to bring attention to the plight of housekeepers. San Francisco, Indianapolis, and a number of other cities also saw protests and boycotts on Thursday.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show. If you think that it doesn't hold out, then just keep playing.
Rick Smith Show. Our tweet of the day comes from Benedict at Large. He says, how is Perry going to run for president after Texas secedes from the Union? I'm confused. Doesn't he lose his citizenship? Well, I guess maybe for a while he would hold dual citizenship. I don't know. And they're not going anywhere. There's part of me that says give him back to Mexico, but that's not going to happen either. But it's important, I think, for average, everyday working people to step up and run for office. I mean, the Rick Perrys of the world, these folks are going to have multi-million-dollar war chests. They're going to have news networks following them. But the real important jobs, what government is closest to us, we don't seem to pay all that much attention to, which is why it's always disheartening to me to see the midterm elections that don't have the voter participation that the presidentials have, because it's the local people who affect your lives the most. That's why I've asked Ron Moore, who is running for city council in Statesville, North Carolina, to come talk to us a bit about his run, why, how, what. Ron, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, brother. It's great to be back.
I appreciate you taking time for us. So you're running for city council there in North Carolina. How's that working out for you?
Well, you know, when I finally found a job after 31 months of unemployment, working part-time as a janitor here cleaning a medical office, I decided I was home. And so I registered to vote and noticed that this is an election year in my ward for the city council, and that my current city council member won a four-year term last time with just 87 votes.
Wow.
So I started attending meetings and just getting a sense of how things worked. I spent time in the city manager's office looking over the budget. We were at a time where we were our budget year starts on July the 1st here in North Carolina. And when I spoke out at the public comment opportunity at the council meeting about the fact that for the third year in a row they were freezing the pay of our city workers, and we know public workers are under attack all over the country, and frankly I felt like sometimes it's something that's done because it's easy, because they're powerless in a state like North Carolina.
Because there aren't people who are willing to stand up for him. So, you know, I want to talk about your background a little bit. I mean, for a time there, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you were close to being homeless.
I was homeless. I'm actually in Statesville because I posted a blog on salon.com on my first day of actually being homeless, which was a little less than a year ago. And a former coworker with SEIU contacted me and told me that she had just bought a house here in Statesville and invited me to come here, and that's actually why I'm here. But yeah, I was only homeless for a few days, but I'll tell you, you know, there comes a time where you just really hit bottom. In this economy.
Yeah, the reason I bring it up is it's an important story of you just needed a helping hand up, and now here you are. Employed and running for city council, participating in your local community, and I think that's a fantastic turn of events, as I'm sure you do.
I'm thrilled that the core of who I am didn't go away. in my years as the founding president of AFTI Local One, speaking out for TSA officers, and all that I lost because of that fight, that despite all of that I didn't really lose the core of what I believed in, and that is that working people simply deserve to be respected, but also deserve to be listened to. That working people know how to balance the budget, they know how to manage things, and we need to respect working people and make sure that people have jobs. And that's ultimately why I decided to run for city council here, because I felt like with the Democratic National Convention coming to Charlotte nearby in 2012, that in a small town like this, we could really start to make an impact. And by the way, my congressperson is Virginia Fox, and I want to run as a proud Democrat. And I'm running as someone who says we can do better, but we've got to be willing to engage with our workers and not just simply act like they're a problem.
And then at this point, how is that being received?
Well, we'll see. I mean, today I filed. So, I've been at every council meeting. I've spoken out. I was really thrilled a few weeks ago to be able to talk about quote A. Philip Randolph and to tell the council that the most effective elected official is a community organizer at heart, that you have to love to talk to the people. And I have a sense that in a small town like this that maybe we're not really speaking with our citizens and our small business owners and our workers. So we'll see. Now that I'm officially running, the climate may change, but I'll tell you, the gentleman that I'm running against, as many times as I attended council meetings and spoke, he never once came up and talked to me. Didn't even engage with someone who was, by the way, I was the only citizen for the most part that attended council meetings. So we really have a problem when it comes to folks who are political, who are active, or they think they are, but they really don't attend these meetings. And you really need to be active on that level to really be able to make a difference.
You know, I look at this and, you know, there's part of me that believes that we're not as far apart. You know, the working people of this country are not as far apart as our politics would lead us to believe. And, you know, you look at what's going on in Washington, you look here in Harrisburg, how divided the two parties are and how ideologically dug in they seem to be. And I don't think people, I don't think average everyday working people are that dug in.
No, and I think that there's a weariness because we're working hard. We're raising families, you know, we're busy doing so much, and I hear so often, I probably hear it every day, especially from the public workers when I always tell them, you know, I'm sorry that your pay got frozen again, because I call that a public service tax. You know, you're telling city workers that they're going to lose their 3.5% raise just because they're powerless to oppose it. But, you know, every single time, literally every single time, I'll just be told, well, I'm just glad I have a job. And, you know, I get that because I'm glad I have a job. But isn't that sad that that's what it's come down to and that we just simply are just grateful that it's not worse? We can do better if we just try to give people a reason to connect and to do something about it.
And to take an interest in their communities and to, you know, as you've done. And I give you nothing but the utmost credit for standing up and deciding, you know what, I'm going to be the guy who runs for city council. I'm going to be the person who changes things.
And in a small town, it's wonderful. I mean, it's quite remarkable to be able to sit on my front porch in the morning and drink coffee and have the mayor jog by, as he does pretty much every morning, and to be able to really engage, you know, with the council and to be a part of things. And my hope is that I want to do this because I have an opinion about economic development, about the decisions we're making in terms of our bidding process and sending jobs to other localities when we award these contracts. But my heart, you know, as an old frontlasher, my heart is to get into the high school, to get into the local Mitchell College and tell young people, look, this is what it's all about, and to find interns and volunteers and to get them excited about not just politics, but governance, you know, making things, you know, using politics to get the good governance. And that's ultimately what really matters.
That's an excellent point. Instead of beating up on the government and making government the enemy and the villain, actually have people, involved, educated, and engaged.
And it's complicated. It's complex. You know, I can be frustrated about this or that issue, but when I had to sit down in the city manager's office and take a look at the budget and understand, you know, how we do things, you know, well, the issue is not, I think it should be done this way. The issue is, how do I get it there?
Right.
You know, and how do we get this done? And at the city level, you're not dealing so much with the cultural issues that really drive us apart and drive us crazy. And, you know, you're really just dealing with, we have 50 roads still here in Statesville that are unpaved. You know, so there are very basic issues that need to be addressed. And we can do that and be successful, and that's exciting.
That sounds exciting. And, Ron, I wish you nothing but the best of luck, and I'm looking forward to see how this works out for you. Congratulations, and if there's anything we can do to help, you're a good friend of the show, and we'd like to help you.
Absolutely, brother. I appreciate it.
Ron, thanks so much, and again, best of luck, brother.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
As Bob Dylan famously wrote, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows, especially when the wind is right in your face, howling at gale force. While Washington fiddles with the knobs and levers of budget reduction, America's great working class is being blown down by harsh economic winds. Yet our country's political and financial elites, sitting in the comfort of their power centers, don't seem to see, hear, or care. If the elites just looked around, here's some of what they'd find. In Central Texas, a surge in poverty is now severely straining the area food bank, which is struggling with more than a 50% increase in demand in the past 3 years. Arizona, which has added only 4,000 jobs in the past year, has 10 unemployed job seekers for every opening, and 45,000 Arizonans are set to lose their jobless benefits in the next few months. By the end of the Great Recession in 2009, the median white household in America had lost $36,000 in net worth. Worse, the median African-American household had lost 83% of its net worth, which is now down to the financially perilous level of less than $2,200. While CEOs of major corporations have jacked up their pay by a fourth since the recession technically ended in 2009, average wages for workers have stagnated. Meanwhile, the price of such basics as food and gasoline have risen relentlessly. Real wages today are 1.6% lower than a year ago. This is Jim Hightower saying, so who is Washington working to help? Not the hard-hit workaday majority, but the $9 million a year CEOs and billionaire Wall Street barons who are demanding drastic budget cuts on programs that help working families, while also insisting that their own lavish fortunes be spared from even the slightest dings. What a shameful time in our history. Can America do better than this? Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. And if you've got a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app and take Class War on the go with you with our program right there at Stitcher. Email from Andy during the break. In 8 years, George W. Bush lost 5.8 million jobs while creating 3 million jobs, so in the net, he lost 2.8 million jobs in his two terms, according to research from Senator Bernie Sanders. In addition, during that same period, 46,000 manufacturing factories were closed. The Washington Post on 1-2-10 reported that from December 1999 to December 2009, a 10-year period, no net new jobs were created in the U.S. He also writes, for every $1 worth of tax cuts, the economy gets back only 29 cents in economic multiplier, taking from the economy, pulling money out, not adding to the economy. Thanks, Andy. I appreciate it, Andy. You know, the reality is he's spot on. You know, and it may sound weird, but, you know, Newt Gingrich during, you know, the last election said, we need to be the party of the paycheck and let the Democrats be the party of food stamps. Well, here's the thing. All those tax cuts that they're handing out to the very wealthy, as Andy has so aptly pointed out, only puts about 29 cents back into the economy as a multiplier. Food stamps is like $1.70 or something. And you go, really? And yeah, because it reverberates in the local economy. It's spent again and again, and it's not something that's pulled out and sent to China. It's not something that's invested overseas. You look at the last 10 years, man. The free trade policies, the neoliberal policies, the, hey, let's give tax cuts to the millionaires and billionaires. Not creating jobs, folks. And if you think that the Republican pledge, which, again, I keep right here on my desk, because I want to be reminded that last November, they promised. They pledged. In fact, they're big on pledges. I pledge jobs, jobs, jobs. And we've seen nothing. We've seen distraction, distortion, delay. We've seen all of that. This whole dog and pony show going on right now, that's all because they don't know what to do on the jobs front. They know how to destroy jobs. Sure can do that, but not creating anything.
Multiplier, I do believe, and most people don't realize it, Social Security is a multiplier in the economy. Why? Because most people get Social Security, spend every dollar of it. There's still, if my numbers are correct, and I believe they are, about 24% of those who receive Social Security, that's all they have. There's another right around 10% that rely solely on Social Security, so they're going to spend every dollar, and they go out and buy food, they go out and buy things that you need to live. So there's an absolutely a positive influx of that money into the economy, which in big picture creates jobs. We don't even talk about that. But those numbers that you just gave, the amount of money that it puts back into the economy, and we're talking about tax breaks, I mean, I didn't realize it was that low, but that's a sobering number.
Yeah, according to the Department of Agriculture, they say $1.84 for every dollar in food stamps they hand out. So you ask yourself, you know, is feeding people and adding to the economy, generating $1.84 in economic activity, is that better than the 29 cents we get when we give that buck to the billionaire? You got to ask yourself that question. It comes down to pure economics. And I would have to say I'd rather feed people. I got another email. Jeb writes, why is it that when the media from the right and left talk about our economic woes, hardly two words on top executive or CEO's obscene compensation gets mentioned? He says it's always railing against union workers, railing against minimum wage workers, railing against environmental laws, labor laws, teacher salaries. Taxes on the rich are too high, and everything that benefits we the people. He says at no time in history has more verifiable facts been available to people in industrialized nations like the U.S., yet we still vote, act, and refuse to acknowledge them. He says, I know you're doing the best you can to educate the masses, but sadly it doesn't seem to be working. Rock on, brother. He says, if we are this naive, gullible, and irrational, then we deserve whatever comes our way. And I would, you know, Jeb, I would argue that, you know, I don't know that we're naive and gullible and irrational. I think it's we're over misinformed, overworked, and burdened. I think when you're driving down the road and all you hear is right-wing drivel, and all you see in newspapers is, well, we're against unions, like the guy we were talking, Bill Street, we were talking to. When all you're hearing is a corporate agenda, it's kind of easy, I think, to kind of get sucked into that. And it only takes, you know, it's junkies like me and like you, Jake, that follow this stuff on a regular basis that, you know, we get frustrated.
Well, I think the gentleman's obviously very articulate, but I have to take a little bit disagree, a little bit on the one issue he talked about, and that is the CEO salaries. I've heard Bernie Sanders. I also heard the Democratic congressman from Florida who lost, whose name escapes me. He's the guy who put on those great demonstrations on the floor of the House. I've heard both of those people really go after CEO salaries. There are a few out there, but here's the problem. Right away when they do it, they say, oh, that's just Bernie Sanders. Or that's just, he's a radical leftist. And right away they marginalize you and call you someone, oh, there you go again with the class warfare. Well, yeah, it is class warfare because, hello, there's a class war going on. It's like Mr. Buffett said, yeah, there is a class war, my class winning. And he's so right.
But at the end of it, what he's saying is, look, in the corporate-controlled, for-profit media, you're not hearing it. You're not seeing it. It's not front and center. What we hear every day, it's those greedy union workers. You know, it's those state workers who are making 34 grand a year. Too greedy! Because they've got health care and they've got pensions.
Well, when it...
And the sad reality is the rest of the workforce, they're getting screwed. I mean, I look at this thing, this lockout down here in Lancaster. They're offering jobs that people were making $18 an hour with benefits. They're offering them $12 an hour with no benefits to become scabs. I mean, is there something twisted about that? I would think if I'm going to disgrace myself, cross a lockout line, cross a picket line, take someone else's job while they're working out their dispute, you would at least pay me more than you were paying them for doing that, and knowing it's a short-term solution, knowing I'm going to have this a day or a week, maybe. I mean, does that not register? They're offering these people basically nothing.
Unfortunately, one of the biggest employers in the country is who? Temp services.
Well, if you add them all together, yes. Then Walmart.
What I'm saying is there's a lot of people out there who go from temporary job to temporary job to temporary job, and unfortunately, probably a lot of the people, well, not a lot, but probably all of them, who are dumb enough to take those jobs probably have no idea what they're really getting into and the deep implications of
the situation. Walk up to the thing, you see people marching around with signs saying, we've been locked out. You turn around, you go home.
I understand that. I understand that you and I know that's a no-brainer. However, unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there that don't have a clue. And that's sad.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Interesting story. Rachel Bunny Mellon, 100-year-old she is, 100 years old she is, philanthropist. She's kind of caught up in this whole John Edwards thing. And she was interviewed by Newsweek. And she said something I guess I kind of agree with. She said he could have been, would have been a great president. I think he would have been if he could have kept it in his pants long enough. The interview was kind of bizarre. Said that he had such hard times with Elizabeth Edwards and, a whole bunch of ridiculous stuff there. But at the end of the day, there was a guy who I thought could have been, really could have been something special.
There's a man I thought really articulated the class war very well. And you and I early on. I liked the guy. You liked the guy. I know some other people involved really liked the guy. My, oh my, has he fallen from grace.
But at the end of the day, he was the ultimate politician. But I thought on message, he was the guy. He had the right message. He had the right idea. I think he would have been a great president.
Mm-hmm.
But here again, another one of these instances where, oops, my Willie got me in trouble. And like Wiener. I'm going, what were you thinking? And yes, I had to bring up Wiener again. So now you got this guy in Oregon. This David Wu evidently has gotten himself into a little bit of sexual problems. Evidently, he was in, this is kind of a weird scenario. He has been accused of some things with an 18-year-old, actually the daughter of one of his longtime campaign donors. So he said he's not going to run for re-election. The question is, will he finish out his term, or will he end it soon? Because Pelosi, said at a recent press conference that they may have to engage in, have to go after him and look into ethics charges because he may have engaged in inappropriate activities. So they have, they're looking into the woo. So no woo-woo for woo. What the heck? What is with these people? Is it that hard? I mean, really, honestly, is it that hard to stay out of trouble for just a short period of time?
Well, let's be honest. Anybody in Congress today, wow, the opportunities are there probably every day. I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying, a lot of people are human and they succumb to our human frailties. That's no excuse, but it's not a first in the history of humankind, and it probably always will be.
I don't know.
The problem
at the end of the day, you got to be honest about it.
Well, but the problem is, as you say, Rick, if you are someone who campaigned on moral values, or worse, you're adamantly against gay rights, and then you find out later that, you might have had a tryst with someone of the same sex, or you're gay yourself, then they call that hypocrisy with a capital H. That's a little bit different.
See, which is why I would never run on any of those absolutes. I would never run on, I hate gay people, and I would never run on, I'm the family values guy, and I would never run on those things. I would tell you, what I am? I'm the economy guy. I'm the guy who wants everybody to have a job. I want everybody to have health insurance. I want everybody to have a pension so that they can retire with some dignity. I want people to have the ability to raise their families in safe communities with good schools. That's where I'm at. All that other stuff, all that morality stuff, I wish we could dump that. Because you can't legislate morality. You cannot possibly, push your morality and your values on everybody else. What I think government should be doing is staying out of the religion game, which is where we seem to be going, especially with someone like Rick Perry, who I still think is the most dangerous guy in the Republican Party. Right now, and possibly the presidential nominee, because he has this belief that he's the prophet and has said that on numerous occasions. And again, that's not even the normal dog whistle politic that the radical right throws out there to their lunatic fringe. This is coming right out and being blatant about it. And that's kind of what's scary about him is that, there are some folks who are going to go, yep, he's our guy because he's outwardly crazy.
Has he always been that religious? I honestly don't know.
I have no idea.
I mean, I heard that
but
too.
But there's rumors that he may be one of those guys that you're talking about. Not really wanting to take the stance on gay marriage because he may be a little light in the loafers himself, which is nothing wrong with that. If that's the case, but here again, he may have taken that very nuanced position in the event that who knows what comes out later on. There have been rumors, and I'm not the one.
No, there's a first. If I can say something, Rick, this isn't an excuse, but
no, we're
I mean, there were right. former presidents who had all kinds of trysts.
Yeah, nobody cares.
With women, but the press respected the position. Today, you're involved in politics. You aren't getting away with it. Anyway.
It's all about infotainment. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service.
Rick Smith.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous. The salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
What they do.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. or Debt Central. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
So the news is, as the debt turns, what's the saga brought us today?
Oh, dear me. Today the saga brought us dueling debt plans. Cue the banjos. We have Speaker Boehner with his two-step plan to raise the debt ceiling by upwards of $2.5 trillion that would require the White House to accept much deeper cuts than he was negotiating last week with President Obama. It's sort of like cut, cap, and balance, but more so. However, it's not more so because House Republicans are saying, not so fast, we're not going for it. So that's not going anywhere.
The question on this is there anything that they will accept? Because
no.
Evidently, no matter how far Obama moves to the right, and I got to be honest, I'm kind of frustrated at how far he has extended himself. I understand it's politics. But at the end of the day, if this collapses, you know, I think Trump is right. The only thing people are going to remember is that it was on Obama's watch.
Well, no, he is right about that. And he's absolutely right about that. But the thing is that there are some things that they are simply not going to accept. And the fact is that there are those in the Republican Party who don't want the president to have, quote, a win, unquote, under any circumstances, who are determined that the president will have to have a second vote next year, no matter what, that will be in the middle of the campaign, and that will be to embarrass and derail. And so, I mean, and so it goes.
Amazing stuff. And what's the Reid plan then? We get the Boehner
plan,
idea.
Well, the Reid plan is in a way similar. It slashes $2.7 trillion over the next decade, raises the debt ceiling by roughly the same amount through the 2012 election, but it's not a two-step plan, so there isn't a vote next year. There are no revenue increases for Republicans, no tax increase. But there are no cuts to Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid for Democrats. This is sounding not bad. I mean, you know, considering that many people feel it's bad, but it addresses a lot of things. And many of the savings in here are savings that are mandatory savings that were negotiated in the bipartisan deficit talks led by Vice President Joe Biden. They've already been agreed to.
Interesting. I wonder what the heads of the Republican Party are saying. You know, the ones we don't get to hear from, the Limbaughs, the Grover Norquists, all the people that they must go pay homage to.
Well, very interesting, because before the Boehner plan was rolled out to the GOP rank and file, Speaker Boehner rolled it out to Rush Limbaugh today. First.
So they basically had to go kiss the ring of the grand poobah.
Yes, and Limbaugh talked about the call that he got from Boehner, because obviously Limbaugh's support of the plan would be advantageous to Republicans because it might help rally the conservative base. It's not clear to me from what I've read whether Limbaugh does support the plan, but Limbaugh sort of gleefully says that Boehner told him he was working with Reid and McConnell and says Obama was irritated at being left out. It doesn't sound like Obama to me. He doesn't get irritated at things like that.
But you got to understand, I mean, why would you go to Limbaugh? At the end of the day, you say what you want about him. He wants chaos. He wants controversy. That's what draws people to the program. I mean, at some point, why would you seek the advice of someone like that who has no political stake in the game? And if you do fail, if you do go down the tubes, he's going to make even more off of that.
That's right. I mean, is it in Limbaugh's interest to get a debt deal?
No, it's in his interest to go down the road and, oh, see, we're making Obama look bad. And that's material. It's content.
Of course. Of course. So it's really fascinating. Really fascinating.
Much like the global warming deniers, we've got the debt deniers.
And that's exactly what Al Gore has been saying. He weighed in today saying some Republicans are living in an alternative version of reality, saying a significant number of Republican and Tea Party members of Congress apparently hold the view that there actually would not be consequences for global markets or the U.S. economy if we defaulted. And that's kind of a response to Representative Ron Paul of Texas, who, as you know, is running for president, who said in an op-ed for Bloomberg, who published him, which is interesting, that defaulting now is actually better than defaulting later.
And what's the rationale for that?
Well, he said, he didn't really, he said that it's just better, and he said his perspective on the possibility was sanguine.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I guess, and maybe I can see some rationale there. If we do it now, we don't have to pay as much interest, so we save that little bit of interest that we would have paid for the extra couple of days. Maybe that's his rationale.
I guess another option would be not to default.
And at the end of all of this, the president, no matter what happens, I think he has to step up and he has to be the leader here. Because I would argue that Congress has already passed the spending for everything that's been legislated. Everything that they've passed, every bill that they've passed, has to be paid for. So it really shouldn't matter what the debt ceiling is. They've already supposedly allocated money for it, so it should be paid for.
That's right. That's right.
So we're having a nonsensical argument. We're basically doing this political charade game, and at the end of the road, it should already be paid for.
Well, I don't know. Then I get confused. I have to tell you, I start getting confused. I find it all very confusing.
Which is why I think, you know, they've been able to play this dog and pony show for so long. Personally, I got to tell you, when they pass a bill, isn't that Congress saying, we're going to pay for this bill, this is going to be in our budget? And if they pass that bill and they vote on it and it goes through and it's signed, the money's got to come with it, no?
Not always. Well, no, because then they have to appropriate the money afterwards, don't they?
Well, I'm of the mindset that if you pass the bill, you had to pay for it. And this is all just smoke and mirrors, all political nonsense, because the Republicans have no idea how to create jobs or get this economy moving, so they need the shiny thing in the room to keep people focused on the fact that we're not creating jobs and we're not digging out of this debt, and my house value is still worth, you know, half of what it was probably 10 years ago.
Well, certainly you and Michelle Bachmann have something in common because she thinks it's smoke and mirrors, but for a different reason.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I think that we've already broken the debt ceiling. How many times have we raised it?
Oh, many, many, many times.
So at the end of the day, did it really mean anything? No, you just kept, and this is just to make Obama look bad, and I believe McConnell.
It is to make Obama look bad.
And I believe McConnell that they're going to do whatever it takes to make him a one-term president. And if that means destroying the country and taking the economy down with it and millions of people suffering, well, so be it, as John Boehner would say.
Cheerful, isn't it?
Frustrating stuff. Victoria Jones, I appreciate the time. I appreciate keeping us up on this the smoke and mirrors game.
Sorry.
Have a great night.
Thank you.
Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Now to find out what's going on across the street. What do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Good story coming out of San Francisco. There's a local out there, IBE local in San Diego, whose number I forgot, 569.
So is it San Francisco or San Diego?
It's San Diego, I'm sorry. Sorry, Rick. Local 569 is working in cooperation with the National Electric Contractors Association. They're building a station within the training facility where actually the public can come up and charge their vehicles. The station is located, as I said, in the IBEW Training Center. That's on Riverview Avenue in San Diego. The training center is powered by a rooftop solar array, and the charging stations is built into the building's electrical supply, so as both are running on solar power. The electric vehicle unit is publicly available to the community to use at any time. State Senator Christine Kehoe joined with the representatives from the San Diego chapter of the Sierra Club and Operation Free, which is a national coalition of veterans, national security experts, and retired military personnel working to secure America with clean energy. They were all there to announce the new charging station. Good news, we're finally doing some things to start the long, long process of ridding ourselves of reliance on foreign oil. For those of you who are computer junkies, you might from time to time go on a site called the Daily Kos, whatever your preference is, Daily Kos. The new folks at Daily Kos this week launched a new blog that will focus on the issues of importance to working people. The new Daily Kos Labor is managed by Laura Claussen, whom you might remember from her time at Working America's Main Street blog. This past week, along with following several of the storylines, Daily Kos Labor reported on an anti-union construction industry group's phony claims and the cost of using labor. The Park Hyatt in Chicago turning its outdoor heat lamps on a picket line when the temperatures were in the high 90s. Now, that's not nice. And Michelle Rhee's high praise of the Tennessee legislative attack on teachers' unions. So if you have some time and you want some good labor stories, again, go to Daily Kos. They now have a site entirely segregated on union stories. I think that's great. Boy, that was kind of nasty, that Hyatt in Chicago. Can you imagine? Turning up the heat on protesters. Nasty, nasty, nasty.
I can imagine. So which is it Kos or Kos?
I pronounce it Daily Kos. Some pronounce it, I've heard it pronounced
Kos. They say Kos.
Okay.
But what they think, that doesn't matter.
You know, what?
We're going to go the Jake way.
Well, it's spelled Daily, D-A-I-L-Y, and Kos, K-O-S, so. Just so our listeners know. I'm sure most of them know this site.
And I don't know that many people remember Laura Claussen, but you know, maybe they do. If you do remember, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com.
Are you saying that she's not famous?
You know, hey, maybe she is. Maybe there's somebody out there who knows her and will stand up for you. Otherwise, I think most people are going to go, I don't remember her.
Okay. Well,
maybe
it's time we get to know her. Sounds like a good lady. How's that?
In fact, we're going to have someone on once a week for the next several months from Daily Kos, from the labor page, from that exact
person. That's beautiful.
Person. So
that's great.
We're really looking forward to that.
Thank you for the report. I got some good stories off there in the past for those of us who tend to be a little more progressive. That's a good site to go to. And they've done nothing but improve their site. I think we can agree on that, right?
As long as we pronounce it right.
Okay. Associated Press story out of Harrisburg. Pennsylvania treasurer criticizes no tax plates. Can you imagine that? Pennsylvania state treasurer is criticizing the new no tax pledge, like the one Governor Tom Corbett signed. McCord told a Harrisburg luncheon audience today, such pledges constrain elected officials and can foster a sense of distrust. Republican governor signed the Americans for Tax Reform pledge, but also says he'd consider fees on certain activities such as natural gas drilling. I hope the governor.
Is that new?
Is that new?
You said new pledge.
Is it a new pledge?
Is that a new pledge? Because I know he signed the one while he was running for governor. Is there a new one from that?
Probably not.
Oh, okay.
But it runs counter to the governor. I think we absolutely do need a natural gas drilling tax.
I agree.
Absolutely. Anyway, McCord noted that Corbett's Transportation Funding Commission recommends lifting the cap on the oil company franchise tax to raise hundreds of millions of dollars a year for transportation projects. Without mentioning Corbett by name, McCord said that amounts to a tax increase and officials should call a spade a spade. McCord, a former venture capitalist who was elected treasurer in 2008, also says he's tentatively planning to seek a second four-year term in 2012, which isn't surprising. I have to say, from purely a political standpoint, I've heard the man speak several times. He seems extremely intelligent, extremely capable. And I think so far he's going to have a pretty good job.
Yep, so far so good. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want, whether it's a trip to the beach
a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseccu.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. VBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call VBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call VBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
I'll give my head to the new constitution. Take a bow for the new revolution. Smiley and free with the jeans all around. Pick up my guitar and play. Just like yesterday. Then I'll get on my knees.
Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, especially that last segment, you can download it at thericksmithshow.com. And also, you can, if you have a smartphone, download the Stitcher app because you can get your class war on the go right there with your smartphone. And no, I still don't remember her, so that's good. Big story coming out of the Postal Service. The U.S. Postal Service is looking at closing 3,653 post offices across the country. That's right. So the places with, quote, unquote, the least amount of foot traffic and retail sales will be slashed and closed, which means that I'm sure one in this area is going to be closed. And when I go to the one in Carlisle, that is already backed up out the door, it will then be not only out the door but around the block as well. So real good. Nice job. So we're going to be closing this, and they're saying, look, it's going to happen in small communities, and we need these cost-cutting measures to offset the losses we've got since nobody wants to seem to invest in a post office. So they are filing a request for a national change of service. So this replacement strategy is going to be kind of interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with this, closing over 3,600 post offices. And that means at least an employee at each, maybe two more job losses, Jake.
Well, I don't know about in Carlisle here, but I'm from a small town, but I would bet, just off the top of my head, they probably have about a dozen employees.
So they can all be looking for jobs very soon. The Republican way, slash and burn and destroy, and unemployment. Because understand, that's the end of all of this. Once we slash and burn the budget, once we cut all of the programs that that help society, that help the people, that actually provide services, what does that leave us? Because I don't see a lot of private for-profit companies out there wanting to provide services to the public.
And again, that's going to fall back on who? the little people.
Exactly. I don't know if you saw this, but I guess New York is now one of the next states to allow gay marriage. There was a great video on YouTube, which is the reason I brought it up, of, you know, the first day they thought they were going to get a whole wave of protest, a whole bunch of people like Fred Phelps and the Westboro Idiot Church thought they were going to come out and do a whole bunch of protesting, so they had all these barriers set up, and there was only one person. One guy with his sign. In fact, in the video, you can actually pick out six different cops who are standing guarding this one guy, which is kind of hysterical if you think about it. That one guy, and you got to give him credit. He's at least passionate about his cause, so much so that he's willing to endure the mockery and the abuse that he so rightly deserved by being the only guy out there.
I mean, seriously, did you ever sit and listen to one of them with a conversation for 5 minutes or more? I'm absolutely amazed, one, and how intelligent some of them are. Here's the irony. The one daughter called in the local radio station.
Oh, stop. How some of them? Who are thems?
The Baptist Church from out in
Missouri.
Westboro.
My mind starts racing, and I'm going...
They were talking about homosexuality and, you know, should you make it legal to allow two homosexuals to marry. Somehow, somebody actually called her in Missouri. She called in the show, and Bob Durgin had her on for about 10 minutes. And it did strike me, what a shame. Intelligent, very intelligent, but some of the most hate-filled, ignorant words I've ever heard a human being utter came out of that woman's mouth. It is just unbelievable what they believe and what they're willing to do. I am amazed, and we talked about it, Rick. I'm amazed that one of them have not been seriously hurt or shot. And I'm not advocating anything, but, I mean, my God, what they do when a parent lost a son. Most of them are, you know, soldiers coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan, and they're burying that. A lot of them are young. And here you have some clown across the street with a sign telling that parent that their son's going to hell. I mean, how much more ignorant can you be than that? But yet, they do believe it, and they all do it, and this is what's scary. They all do it in the name of God.
Well, we do an awful lot of bizarre things in the name of God. An awful lot. How many people know, do you have a relative named Billy Long, Republican representative from Missouri?
Maybe way back, I don't know.
Evidently, he had an interesting tweet because they found that singer Amy Winehouse dead in her house. She was found dead over the weekend. So this guy who represents some of the poorest areas in the country, he decided that, you know, I need to tweet about this. So this afternoon he tweeted, "No one could reach Amy Winehouse before it was too late. Can anyone reach Washington before it's too late? Both addicted. Same fate." I'm going, really? Was that the first thing that came to your head when you were thinking about the deficit reduction and the debt and all this and the debt ceiling? First thing you thought about is, how can I manipulate this woman's death? Really? Is that the Republican way? I mean, does it make any sense to you? I mean, it just seems kind of doofusy.
She died of, since you brought her name up, she did die of overdose. They showed a picture of her about a week before she died. My God. She looked like death warmed over.
And, you know, God bless her. You know, what if that's the path she chose, well, you know, you got what you got. And now she'll be immortal. Anyway, I want to thank our guests today, Bill Street. I'm wishing them the best on Wednesday as the workers at the IKEA plant there in Danville, Virginia, cast their ballot for representation. I'm hoping the best for them. Also, Vita Shook from the airline stewardess union, the airline union. Thank her for the information on the FAA. And, of course, Angela Peoples from Campus Progress. What an absolute shame what we've done to education in this country. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, you can go to thericksmithshow.com. Download our podcast there for your entertainment, enjoyment, convenience. Take Class War with you on the go, which I kind of like that, just a little bit. But we'll be back tomorrow. If you've got any questions, comments, something on your mind, you can always email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do appreciate the emails, and we use them here on the program quite often. So there you go. I hope everyone had a great weekend. The heat seems to have broken a little bit here in the area. I hope you're cool tonight. We'll see you tomorrow night. Have a good one.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Now we're told there's a hole in the ozone.